to WRAF's award-winning Night Call, Detroit's longest-running phone-in talk show with Peter Werby and Julene Jordan. Peter and Julene will be voicing their opinions, and they want to hear yours. Call them at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter and Julene.
Well, thank you very much. Welcome, everybody. Hi, Julene Jordan.
Hi, Peter Werby. You know, you are so zen tonight. I hope it doesn't affect your performance on the show. What happened? Oh, yeah, you did a Tai Chi workshop.
I did, except that it was a sword form workshop.
Oh, okay. So, you're ready to fight.
I'm ready to cut people off. No, just like all Tai Chi, it's about balance.
That's right, I know.
So it is a peaceful sword form.
Well, there is some, it has to feel meditative. Yeah. You have to feel better after you take a Tai Chi workshop, let alone a class.
I'm wondering if I can bring my sword. They're wooden. We'd practice with wooden swords. If you have like 20 people swinging like sharp metal swords around, wouldn't be a good idea. So we practice with wooden swords.
Oh, that's probably best. It goes with your plastic rifle that you were going to purchase last week.
Yeah. But, I was thinking about bringing this enormous plastic replica of a pistol to the Royal Oak Arts Eats and Beats.
Yeah, and our buddies at the Michigan State Police said, now, they thought it was funny, but probably not a good idea.
I don't get it. I don't know why they thought it wasn't a good idea. It was just like a joke because people, you may know.
They said, don't buy a plastic gun, said the sergeant.
But I think he thought I meant a little one. Like one that was like 3 feet.
No, we decided on a squirt gun party.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
At the Arts Beats and Eats, these whack job gun nuts want to bring guns to this family event holstered because they're in something called open carry, which people thought meant you could bring a beer with you in a car.
Right.
But no, it's anyway. So I wonder if I could bring my sword, the metal sword.
Oh, not the metal sword.
Oh!
Wait, you probably could.
Yeah.
Hey.
Yeah.
It's a weapon.
Well, I know.
Right?
Why doesn't, if everybody was armed, we'd all be safe.
Now, you could take that to the Renaissance Festival.
You were there.
I was there.
Yeah.
There were a lot of swords, wooden, every kind.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, that's good.
Huzzah.
This is a phone-in talk show. I'm Peter Werby. I'm here with Julene Jordan. And we'd like you to join us, 313-298-WRIF.
Ah, 313-298-9743.
And if you'd like to email us, call talkyes@yahoo.com. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/nightcall, and friends are wanted. We'll have a podcast up by midnight. Nope.
Noon tomorrow,
yeah.
Yeah.
I'm trying to double task, right?
Don't do it. Stay one thing, Peter.
It's hard. Well,
if there's anything you've learned through the years.
I got to change screens so I can see what the hell's going on. Well, last week, remember I said an odd definition of power. Power usually means, in fact, when we talk about actual power in the real world, it's who commands the guns. I mean, it's usually the political state. They have ultimate power in terms of possession of weapons. I mean, the state, again, ultimately is what's been called a body of armed men. In other words, if it was just a bunch of guys that decided to rule us and they said, you're going to do this, and we go, nah, we're not. But if we, if they tell us we're going to do something, and we go, nah, they send guys with guns.
You will do that.
But most societies in the modern world, particularly countries like the United States, the other modern industrial countries don't rule by brute force. There's still countries around that do that, but rather the capacity to define reality. I mean, mm-hmm. Their terms are what makes everything jump. And so I use this old phrase that power is the ability to define reality. So your views of it's not you. I mean, you, the listener, me, the broadcaster. It's the people in power. So it's the dominant culture, the dominant view of the world that commands the high ground. And increasingly, though, it's not just like the ruling class that does. That's the way it used to be. You'd have these guys with tall silk hats, although it's still these ultra-rich guys that ultimately rule us. Boy, mm-hmm. It's three times I've used the word ultimately since we started.
Maybe you should air check yourself. Work on these.
Exactly.
But we call those crutch words.
Crutch words, yeah.
Radio.
So, and then I always lose my train of thought, too, when we get off on that. Oh, yeah. But really what's happened in the modern world is we're ruled by the spectacle, mostly that through television and the capacity to... to present images as reality. So things that are collected and then consumed as a spectacle become just as real as me seeing you. And I'm part of, this is like an old-fashioned spectacle, right? Because we just have voices out there. Mm-hmm. But the powerful images on television, those are what often define reality. And so things that are that don't mean much or that might get ignored or what have you. You see where I'm going with this, folks? That get mm-hmm. exploded into what becomes our reality. And we're all required to jump to it. So there could be, like, any number of extraordinarily important things. And sometimes I start talking about them, in what's called the political economy. Yeah, that's interesting. The trade deficit is growing. Yeah, that's exciting radio.
There goes Werby droning again.
All that stuff has to do with what happens in our lives in terms of our income,
In
the end, right. So that stuff's really important. But what happens is something like a demonstration happens in Washington. There was one in Detroit, too, that I went to, which I'll talk about as well.
That was the one we've been talking about for the past few weeks, the jobs and justice.
Jobs, justice, and peace.
Yes. But over in D.C., that lunatic Glenn Beck puts together, and the ultimate insult. There was he was so insulting on so many levels. I read about it. I couldn't even bear to watch it because I would have totally barfed, to be quite frank.
Yeah.
Was that he turned it into this big religious revival? First of all, did he not, Peter?
He did, but I was happy he did.
You were?
Well, he didn't...
To show how nutty he really is?
It really wasn't that, politically charged. I mean, ultimately, it... I can't stop saying that word.
You will. Now you're too focused. Maybe you should just forget about it and say it all the time.
I will.
But no,
all the time.
The biggest slap in the face was that he gave the speech on the same spot where Martin Luther King Jr. gave the I Have a Dream speech. The nerve of this white man.
I don't care.
I do.
I know. A lot of people do.
I am PO'd about it.
That is, again, the power of symbols. And, I mean, I think it's, one of the things, a friend of mine, not so long ago, said to me, somebody you wake up, your life, you operate on one sort of, one manner, and then someone says something to you. And this friend of ours said to me, just because someone's trying to insult you, you don't have to get insulted.
Well, it is all how you perceive and how you react, right?
Because it is a spectacle, so it's almost gone. I mean, we're giving it a little bit of life here.
Well, but they gave it a whole lot of life in the media. So we're taking it from a different perspective.
Yeah.
And I think that's okay.
So who knows how many people were there? I mean, I know as we whine that when we bring like a million people to Washington, D.C., as progressive people, leftists, anti-war people, feminists, all sorts of folks like that have over the last, say, 30 years, it gets bare mention in the media. And there's something fascinating to the media. It's supposed to be the liberal media. Well, how come the liberal media promoted it to such an enormous extent that
they should have ignored it.
It was like the lead story on NBC News.
And every website that you went to.
Yeah, absolutely. And beyond that, though, that it was promoted, like in Yahoo News, DC's Truth Honor Rally tests Glenn Beck's power. Man, I mean, it just doesn't get any better than that for an entertainer, somebody in this industry. I mean, they've become a household word thanks to this continued repetition in the media. Before the march, again, the New York Times, the staid New York Times, the probably the epitome of the liberal media to the teabaggers that were mostly there. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's who was there. I don't know whether there was 100,000 there, 500,000 there, whatever. By the way, they're talking now like 600,000 people were there. They showed...
They meaning Fox News.
Yeah.
There was one point someone saying there were a billion people there. These people.
It could have been 2 billion.
Oh God! No.
But here,
no, there weren't.
They showed that, you know, it was right where Martin Luther King led the 1963 civil rights march and demonstration there at the Lincoln Memorial, and they showed the crowd there, at which was 250,000, and it looked a lot larger than what the scenes, the parallel scenes that they showed. But I don't care. Maybe there was 500 or 600,000 there. What always happens to the marches that you and I have gone to, Jalene, is there'll be a million people there or half a million people.
And they'll say...
Tens of thousands.
Yeah, right.
That's always they say. Tens of thousands. Well, that's true.
Tens and tens of thousands.
So I'm given up whining about that and expect that. But one of the things that's never happened, there's never been day after day to say that a million women and some men are going to be in Washington, D.C. for a reproductive rights rally. They're never going to say hundreds of thousands of people are expected to oppose a war in Iraq or something like that. That never occurs. I mean, this is fairly unusual. And you got to remember, these teabaggers are a fairly small stripe of American society.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when you say the power they have within the Republican Party or they're mobilizing this discontent, these are all these right-wing Republicans. They're all white with very, 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 very few exceptions. They're mostly middle-aged, they're mostly middle-class, and they're not really representative of the mainstream of this country. They start talking about take America back. I mean, what do they want, the Bush administration back?
I
mean,
no,
who are these folks?
Well, maybe they do.
Well, and the theme of this Glenn Beck rally was restoring honor. Now, that's a weird concept because... I mean, who put American honor? I'm not even 100% sure what that even means. But if there is national honor, who put it in the toilet? 8 years of the Bush regime, of wars based on lies, of ruining the economy, of the U.S. officially becoming a torture state, on and on and on like this. So, yeah, I'm all about restoring honor. One of the ways you'd restore honor is that you would bring George Bush and Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld and the rest of them, bring them to the international court for crimes against peace to begin with. I mean, that might have something. Let's see. AirPhotoLive.com says 79,000 and 96,000 people approximately. They professionally estimate crowd attendance. Mm-hmm. So they say that there was under 100,000. I don't know, Stephanie.
I'm going to go with that.
I don't care. I mean, there are many whacked out people. I mean, let's go to another. Let's be charitable. There, this sector of the population, highly conservative, middle-aged, almost exclusively white, cannot make sense of the world as it's presenting itself.
True.
Both the crises that we all are facing, not just them. I mean, it's funny how we're similarly situated to many of them. I mean, if they're middle class, they're probably doing a little bit better. But they're also anticipating great changes in the world and in our country. So and they do not know how to deal with it. So when you start talking, as Glenn Beck said, America today, begin to turn back to God. That was his message.
He did. And then later he said, there's nothing we can do that will solve the problems that we have and keep the peace unless we solve it through God.
Well, I would invite anybody, and I promise I will not, you'll have to get a similar promise from Jalene, I will not give you any hard time if you can tell me what in the world that means. Here we are, facing what we are, near to bankruptcy as a nation, heavily in debt. I'll get too parenthetical here. Involved in two wars, it's draining our economy. The rich are running rampant over us all. Foreclosures, unemployment, on and on and on. Forgetting about whose fault it was. You can say it's Barack Obama's, I can say it's George Bush's, but whatever, the problem is there. And today, America begins to turn back to God. Programmatically, in terms of policy, what in the hell does that mean? Can anybody give us an idea? 313-298-WRIF.
Jerry wrote in, I earlier said that I felt that if I watched Glenn Beck and watched the speech, that I would vomit. And he said, the most I was able to glean from Beck was that Screech Owl was... that and that screech owl was "Love Jesus, Jesus loves war." If anyone you can call poison control, they'll tell you to induce vomiting. Go get some Ipecac.
Who's the screech owl? Sarah Palin?
I think so.
Yeah. There's a T-shirt that says even Palin's beloved Bible wants her to shut up. And it's 1 Timothy. I forgot how you read this stuff. I'm not much of a Bible man, but from the book of Timothy. Timothy said, I do not permit a woman to teach or to have authority over a man. She must be silent.
Okay, well, that totally blows. Another reason I don't like the Bible. Sorry.
Yeah.
No, you know, all you loving Christians, I love you.
Well, there's another aspect of this, and that's the prominence of religion in this era. I mean, we keep looking at the Muslim world and seeing these radicals that have done such damage to our country, to the countries in which they live, to other countries around the world. And I mean, it's an extraordinarily small sector of that religion as well. I mean, most organized religions have a very, very horrid past. I mean, just look at Christianity, its role in colonialization, the Inquisition, the Crusades.
Well, it's on and on and on and on throughout time.
I mean, the wars that the Muslim religion involved themselves on. I mean, religion, organized religion, and most of the people that practice religion now are pretty peaceful. I mean, you see what they I can't remember the phrase, intercommunal violence, where Muslims are attacking, or Hindus are attacking Muslims, and Catholics are attacking Protestants, and or it's the other way around, I guess, in Northern Ireland, Protestants attacking Catholics, and all that. So, I mean, religion can easily be said to be a bloody sword. And the fact that it's coming to the fore now as people are putting it forth even as a solution without having any substance to it isn't very unusual, because almost in every period of crisis in American history, there's been a great religious revival as well.
Peter, I have to divert the show momentarily, because we have a listener in Sweden who said, he says, you give the telephone number, found the fellow telephone number, but it's numerals. So it's 313-298-9743, in case you're still up. And he had to let Maggie out, said he's never on up at this hour, and it's time for him to call, him or her. So give a call.
Yeah, so it's about 5 in the morning.
313-298-9743. Yeah. We do try to say it.
There was a character in American history and in Detroit history that was also a media figure and was on the far right, very fascistic, supported the Nazis, and he broadcast right from right here in Detroit. And he was Father Coughlin, and he was the pastor of the Shrine of the Little Flower in Royal Oak on Woodward.
Oh, yeah, the ones they do the abortion crosses. It's always...
Yeah.
So it's just such a warm, fuzzy feeling.
And they used to call it the Shrine of the Little Fuhrer, actually. So there's some antecedent to that, some precedent. But so here we have a couple of things. So we have all the mainstream media promoting this rally. We have then Foxhole News, which has given $1 million to the Republican Party as a donation, which I said last week, I don't know why the Republican Party isn't giving Fox News $1 million, because it's just essentially their publicity outlet. So it's not so unusual that these people were whipped up to the extent that they were. Now, here, this is from Associated Press, came through Yahoo News. It says, Beck rally signals election trouble for Dems. Now, why?
I thought, come on.
You know, why would it? I mean, the Democrats are in... I'll tell you why the Democrats are in trouble. The Democrats are in trouble not because Glenn Beck can mobilize all of these right-wing, middle-aged, white Republicans who would never vote for the Democrats anyway. They're in trouble with me and Jalene. They're in trouble with a lot of you because they haven't delivered on what they promised. They have played it too close to the mainstream. They haven't diverted enough from the regime that was prior to Obama's election. He had it all. He has both houses of of Congress, and he has the presidency. He had a mandate for change, and he's just been too weak a president. So, and I'm not going to go vote for all these Democrats. I'm not going to vote for Sander Levin in the 12th district. Screw that guy. And people say, well, what if a Republican gets in? Well, you know. Too bad. So
this is where Peter and I differ. It's not Pete and repeat once in a while.
All right. So the gathering was advertised as an opportunity to honor American troops. And again, that's a little strange in a way. I mean, it's not that people that act out of a sense of service to the United States don't deserve to be honored. It's that the sort of suggestion is they're not being dishonored. They're being dishonored, or were. And I mean, I guess they were by George Bush, who sent them off to die in this war and to come back crippled and with all sorts of emotional problems. But it is like pulling these patriotic strings, you know, which I will never respond to. But Restoring Honor, that was the name of the rally. And there is a lot more here. Let me see if I should get into that, or I want to. Let's see. Oh, yeah. Here's what Beck did say, that he regretted saying that President Obama was a racist.
But he said President Obama is a racist.
But he said he regrets saying it.
Yeah, you said he regrets that President Obama is a racist. Oh. Let's clarify.
God, you know, it scares me when I think I'm here by myself when you're out.
No, you do fine. You know.
Yeah, I don't have a. You're my crutch.
Right.
He said he had come to see Mr. Obama not as a racist, but an advocate of, this is so bizarre, of liberation theology, which he said pitted victims against oppressors.
But
isn't that a good idea?
Really?
Isn't that a good idea? Liberation theology has generally been used in reference to a movement begun in the Roman Catholic Church in the 60s and the 70s in poor parts of Latin America in reaction to social injustice. Sounds like a good idea. That some critics say has been taken over by leftists. Well, I guess it makes you a leftist if you were a Catholic priest and you were mobilizing your parishioners who were being tortured and beaten and oppressed and exploited against these ruling powers that generally were being paid off by Washington, but with our tax dollars as well. So I mean, these people are so strange. Sarah Palin says, we must not fundamentally transform America. Okay.
Wait, aren't they saying that they want change?
Well, no, they want it back the way it was.
They want it back.
When? When do they?
Really? How far should we go back?
Is there any teabaggers out there? Any teabaggers out there that can make some sense of this for us?
We need some clarification.
Do they want to go out? Do they want to go back to the Bush administration? I can't think there's too many people who want to. Do they want to go back to the
pre any regulation
Clinton administration?
Carter. Where do you want to go?
Well, how about maybe Reagan?
Oh, how about Nixon?
It's Morgan. It's morning in America. Yeah. So Sarah says we must not fundamentally transform America as some would want. We must restore America and restore her honor, which means okay. Help us out here, folks, because we have no. The understanding whatsoever. Well, let me tell you.
We need to restore America before she was in the scene.
Right. Here, 313-298-WRIF, if you can help us out, make us understand what restoring America means. I'm looking at the clock. I want to get to just one. Well, you know what? I'll save that because there was another march on Saturday. It was here in Detroit, and it had, if we want to give the teabaggers $500,000, although apparently airphotoslive.com says it was less than 100,000 people, but whatever it was, there was about 5,000 people that marched in the city of Detroit, and it was a march called by the United Auto Workers president, Bob King, the UAW, and Jesse Jackson with Operation Push. About 5,000 people came, and this was a little easier to understand. It was a call for jobs, for justice, and for peace.
Yeah, pretty easy.
I understand that.
Yeah.
And you say, well, those are kind of slogans, too. They are a little more substantive on the face of it than restoring American honor or we have to go back to God or
whatever. They weren't brandishing their guns. Their guns, yeah. their God, and their whatever else.
Although there was a tremendous amount of religion on stage, there, I would say it was Detroit, the marchers, yesterday, it was, where I took part, was probably 50% white and 50% black, and there were gospel choirs on stage, and they were rocking.
I heard a first account of the show because I listened to Jesse Jackson's radio show this morning.
Okay, so he talked about it?
Yeah, he talked all about it, and he had folks from Detroit on the show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ryan in Westland writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. I'm a first-time marcher, and I must say I had a great time. The music was great, and the message was clear. To paraphrase Jesse Jackson, no one is going to fight for us. We have to fight for ourselves. Sadly, says Ryan, there is this mentality that we can sit back, watch TV, and eventually Superman is going to swoop in and save the day. Well, he says, I have bad news. It's not going to happen. We need to stand up, demand our jobs back from overseas, and call for a complete overhaul of the financial system. Together we stand, divided we fall. Teabaggers, what do you think about that?
Don't be afraid to call.
Yeah, I don't get it. Here, on my website, check out my website. There's some, I think, good articles about it all. It's Teabaggers in Washington, D.C., and it says, hey, teabaggers, you're dupes for the rich. Because, again, there's a lot of, I mean, some of it that you're, expressing is just totally wacky. That somehow that, that there's been this usurper in the White House and all of that stuff. But when you get down to your really real concerns about your financial lives, about your future, about your pension and all that, this affects all of us, every single one of us. And when you look, as let me say for the ninth time, ultimately, of who is behind all of this, this teabagger movement, it's billionaires. And you're carrying water.
It's the Koch brothers.
It's the
Koch brothers.
K-O-C-H.
I mean, K-O-C-H, yeah. Rather. I need you, too, see?
I knew the Koch brothers.
I spent a year with them. 1 year. I spent a week with them 1 year.
Never mind. But the Koch brothers are these extraordinarily wealthy people. And who really put this march together was Rupert Murdoch, who owns, in part,
Fox News,
yeah. And also David and Charles Koch. And they give hundreds of millions of dollars to the right wing.
Now, companies that these Koch brothers own, Georgia Pacific, which produces Angel Soft, Brawny, Soft and Gentle, Mardi Gras, Dixie. They have Koch Minerals, Koch Fertilizers. They have Cattle Industries. They have Lycra. I mean, they have a lot. Look it up. And if you are into boycotting, like I am.
Well, you would probably have to go naked.
What? I would.
Well, I mean, the rich control everything that we need and use.
Yeah, that's true.
But so here are people that either have this deep religious concern, something I don't share in the slightest, that we have to go back to God. Again, some of you are going to tell us what that is. Or you think a usurper has, in the White House. Or you have genuine concerns about the economy, about the deficit, all of this stuff. And the Koch brothers, what their concerns are, and I think this is said really well in Frank Rich's column, The Times today, the New York Times, the billionaires bankrolling the Tea Party, says their program opposes a federal deficit but has no objections to running up trillions in red ink in tax cuts to corporations and the super rich, apologizes to corporate malefactors like BP. It goes on and on.
Well, they claim to be environmentalists, but through these companies, they are some of the worst perpetrators of damaging the environment. Think about Georgia Pacific. Think about cutting the trees that they're cutting down.
They call for a freeze on federal regulations, says Frank Rich, in an era when abuses in the oil, financial, mining, pharmaceutical, and even egg industry, among others, have been outrageous. So what they want, maybe you want your country back. Maybe you want
an American president.
Maybe you want the deficit reduced. They want a Republican Congress that will not have any constraints on corporate capital at all. You get that? You are dupes for the rich. Maybe what you want is, it must be, in your mind, decent, legitimate, it's good for you, it's good for your community. You think we could disagree about that, good for our country. They don't care anything about you. They laugh at you, these rich guys.
And we're not even talking about the doctors and the lawyers. We're talking about the rich,
the ultra-rich
corporate owners.
We're talking about the Koch brothers that want to get Republicans in the office, not so they'll bring God back to America or a white man back to the presidency. They're talking about, again, going back to deregulation so that all the pollution that their industries create won't be regulated, that they'll be able to make more and more obscene profits. So, I mean, it's pathological on many regards. I mean, they're so rich that they could adopt a progressive agenda and still be ultra rich.
True.
So it's just totally sick. All right. So what do you think? That's what I say. Teabaggers, you're dupes for the rich. You tell me and Jalene what you think. Well, I want to talk a little more about the rally here in Detroit, and we'll get all of you on the air. So hang on. Don't hang up.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Jalene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Let your opinion be heard. Call us at 313-298-WRIF.
Whatever's going on, it seems to be far from over.
Peter and Jalene will be taking more of your calls right after this.
Feels like time's running out. Maxed out on your credit cards, collection calls are coming every day, and you're two payments behind on your mortgage. You need help. We're Credit Card Relief, and we've been helping people just like you for nearly a decade. Call Credit Card Relief right now. The consultation is free, and the relief is real.
Call 866-290-8282. Not available in all states. Call 866-290-8282. That's 866-290-8282.
If you want a new computer but think you can't get credit, think again. Just call Tronics Country right now. No matter what your credit status is, now you can own a brand new desktop or laptop computer. Your approval is guaranteed as long as you have an active checking account and can afford small weekly payments. With Tronics Country, there's no credit check. You will not be turned down. Call right now and order your new computer. You'll also get a free color printer and a free digital camera. Just call 800-990-2258. But that's not all. Call right now and you'll also get a free 22-inch high-definition TV with your paid purchase. You heard right. A free TV with your new computer. All you need is an active checking account and your approval is guaranteed. Don't wait. Call Tronics Country right now. Call 800-990-2258. That's 800-990-2258. 800-990-2258.
Did you know the tap water in your home may be hazardous? Not to your health, but to your appliances and your wallet. Your home's hard water creates pipe clogging line scale, and that can shorten the life of your water heater, ruin your dishwasher, and break down your washing machine. Lime scale deposits block the heating element, and that could be costing you an extra $1,200 a year in energy and wear. But you can remove lime scale without chemicals, magnets, or salts. It's easy with HydraCare, the patented device used worldwide. See for yourself at bestsoftwater.com. You simply clip HydraCare to your main water pipe. HydraCare removes and prevents lime scale buildup in your entire plumbing system. If your home has hard water, extend the life of your appliances with HydraCare. Try it risk-free. Just go to bestsoftwater.com. That's bestsoftwater.com. Or call now, 888-883-8187. That's 888-883-8187.
Detroit's Rock Station, 101 WRIF.
The Riff.
101 WRIF.
Everything that rocks.
Hey, Dad.
What?
I can't get the ketchup bottle open.
Here, let me try. Here you go.
Thanks.
You don't have to be a hero to be a hero. When you adopt a child from foster care, just being there makes all the difference. To learn more, call 1-888-200-4005. A public service announcement brought to you by Adopt U.S. Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Like a nice skim, no-whiff latte?
Hey, you're the Red Defender, right?
Yes.
I saw you in the paper. You saved a runaway train.
That's right.
So shouldn't you be out saving something?
I already stopped a bank heist this morning.
Evil doesn't take a break.
Can I sit down for a second?
Hey, dial back the caffeine, man.
Saving the world isn't easy. Saving a life is. One pint of blood can save up to 3 lives. Go to bloodsaves.com. A public service message brought to you by the Ad Council.
McGruff, the crime dog, here with my nephew Scruff. Get a pencil and write down an important address. It's for the new McGruff comic activity book.
And it's full of me.
The address is...
Scruff McGruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
Hey, Scruff McGruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652. Tells you what to do about guns and about bullies and drugs and about strangers who want to give you a ride. And it's full of games and puzzles, too. So for your free copy of my new comic activity book, just write... Not bad.
Can I do it again?
One more time. You'll be helping me think of fighting a crime.
A public service message from this station, the U.S. Department of Justice, the Crime Prevention Coalition, and the Ad Council.
Back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Here are Peter and Julie.
All right, thank you very much. Welcome back to our second segment. And, hey, we're trying to get some teabaggers to explain to us what Glenn Beck means, what he said at his rally yesterday. America today begins to turn back to God.
You know, maybe if we called them tea partiers, they'd be
aren't
more
they teabaggers?
They'd be more apt to call us.
They think we're... Okay.
Let's just do it for now.
Well, okay. Tea partiers. But one
plain
of the,
nice.
Yeah, I said that there appeared to be no... There is no programmatic agenda, but there is in many ways. People in the crowd, according to this account, echoed Mr. Beck's ideas that progressives were moving the United States towards socialism and that entitlement programs like Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid must be ended. Hey!
What?
They want to end...
They want to end...
Tell Grandma that.
Yeah, talk about a death panel.
You know, these are middle-age people. So, I mean, I guess it means 40 and up, but you see these shots of people, and they look like they're in their 50s and their 60s. And
they're in their flag hats and their shirts. I saw images on the Internet.
I'm thinking more about Social Security and Medicare. Do people really want this? And why, you know, I don't get this about they want to get rid of these programs. And I just happen to have my little copy of the Constitution of the United States, which begins, "We the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, and promote the general welfare." Hello? I mean, doesn't
it's
Medicare and Medicaid...
Welfare, yeah. Meaning, yes, yeah. Take care of the elderly, those in extreme poverty.
So these are... So, yeah, all right. The other thing we were saying was that we're not the tea beggars. What are they? The
tea partiers.
The tea partiers.
Yeah, we're going to be nice for like a half hour.
Yeah.
That's all I can take.
The tea partiers... essentially they're dupes of the ultra wealthy, that they may have any idea under the sun about what they want, but the people that are bankrolling, I mean, one of the things that happened, I had to get all these people to Washington. And when we bring people to Washington for a liberal or progressive or left or anti-war demonstrations, we raise money with, bake sales and what have you and individual contributions. These ultra wealthy guys like the Koch brothers, Google these people, K-O-C-H.
Koch Industries. I mean, it's a pretty well-known name.
K-O-C-H Brothers, and see what you come up with. A big article in the New Yorker, not the New York Times, the New Yorker magazine. I think it's this week. In any event, they paid hundreds of thousands of dollars. They paid for the buses, and they were catered. They paid for people's rooms.
Staging, things like that.
Yeah, I mean, hello.
Sound system.
And what they want... They don't care about abortion. Apparently, these Koch brothers even were all about supporting gay marriage and what have you. I mean, half the Republicans are gay anyways. Why wouldn't... Maybe those brothers,
that's
gay.
That's right.
They're gay.
Well, according to Randy Rhodes, talk show host, who I love. You think she's a little harsh, which is exactly why I love her. She said that every single Republican who votes against like gay marriage or something, they are definitely gay. That is the sign that they're gay.
Dick Cheney's gay.
He is.
Yeah, so is George Bush.
Oh, that's where Dick Cheney's daughter got it. It is in the genes,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, yeah. Think of it, think about Cheney's nickname. All right, so the contention.
We digress.
Very juvenile.
Frequently.
Puerile is the fancy word.
Puerile.
So the point being is you're carrying, if you, we're given too much attention to it, like I say, fairly small minority of people in America, but if you're carrying water for the ultra rich. They can't do their own work themselves to get them all the tax breaks and no regulations and increase their fortune at the expense of ordinary Americans, so they need you. And some of you, a very small portion of the country, showed up there. All right, let's take some calls. 313-298-WRIF, Peter Werby and Jalene Jordan. And let's see, here is Tommy. Tommy's in Monroe. Hi, Tommy. The home of George Custer.
Oh, you have
Custer,
to say it every time.
The home
time.
Of George Custer and
Fermi 2.
And Fermi 1.
One, and, but may, there may be a 2 or a 3, or what was that?
What's up, Tommy?
How you guys doing?
We're doing good.
How are you?
I wanted to tell you what I thought Glenn Beck was talking about with the whole turn back to God thing.
Yeah.
I didn't make it to the rally, but I watched it on TV, and what I got from it is he was basically saying, you got to give him back his fillet of fish, you douchebag.
What? I didn't even hear. I heard douchebag. But...
give him back his fillet of fish. It's that McDonald's commercial that someone called in about once before. It may have been this guy. And we were both like, what is he talking about? It's clear we don't watch that much TV.
You realize he waited like over half an hour just to say that?
I liked it.
No, okay.
We need a little humor.
I don't care. Yeah, yeah.
Now that I know what give me back my fillet of fish is. And he used one of my favorite derogatory, which we can say that on the air, by the way.
Yes.
Derogatory terms. I call a lot of people that. Not on the air.
All right. Here's Anthony in St. Clair Shores. Hi, Anthony. You're on the air.
Hey, Peter. How's it going?
We're good. Are you talking into your phone, or are you...
on the speakerphone.
You're on the speakerphone.
No. I'm on my Bluetooth, but I can get off if I need to.
Go ahead.
If it's not too tough.
We'd rather you didn't crash. Go ahead.
All right, great. All right, well, first thing, my thought with the tea parties and the tea baggers, whatever you want to call them, is I have a problem with the idea of taking America back. Because when I've never voted Republican in my life. But when George Bush was president, I never thought of taking anything because I always looked at it as we're together.
Mm-hmm.
So that, to me, is the most divisive thing anyone could ever say.
Okay. Good point.
And now, while the fact that there's only a small number of tea partiers out there, there's only a small number of people who vote in the first place. So a small number is a powerful force.
Hey, you can call them baggers. Peter and I are just not doing it for 15 minutes.
Yeah.
But you can.
And it's almost up.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I don't want to give any, I don't want to call anybody anything they don't want to be called. You know, it is funny.
Well, they started it.
We call them tea baggers at work. I won't lie, but.
Okay.
You know, whatever.
We like your place of work.
You know what? I got to tell you, Anthony, they originally were called themselves that, but then when they realized the what would you call it, the slang use of...
that it's a sexual act.
A sexual act, yeah. Then they moved away from it. So they started it. Yeah, yeah. So.
But either way, I have no problem with it. I mean, you're allowed to think what you're going to think, but the idea of taking something from your fellow citizens, to me... is a problem. Everyone's message, whenever it's different than someone else's, should always be just, we want to change it. That's it.
Yeah, there you go.
You know, it shouldn't be we want to take anything from anyone. It should be we want to change it. Because good or bad, right or wrong, you're still in the same situation together.
You know what? The only way that the only place that I can see that being okay is these women take back the night rallies for women who have been sexually assaulted or just plain raped. There's these rallies called Women Take Back the Night. That one's okay, right?
That's okay. All right, Anthony, thank you very much. And that's not taking anything from anyone. It's essentially,
right.
So when you say take back the night, is that women should be able to
feel safe at night.
Feel safe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. All right. This always scares you. So careful.
Okay.
The rich. sketch segment. And Stephen, Jimmy, and everyone else on hold, please stay there, and I'll get to you.
But we do have some open lines, so if you are thinking about saying something, 313-298-WRIF or 9743.
This is interesting that we're not getting any teabaggers that are going to explain to us what...
With tea partiers.
No,
we still have
15 minutes.
2 minutes.
Oh, okay, the tea party people.
Peter.
What that meant to restore America's honor, I don't understand that. I mean, and what do they want to go back to? The Bush administration, Clinton administration, the Bush 1 administration? I want to go back to the good old days of Reagan.
Oh, where it all started
and
falling.
Yep. Well, at a black tie dinner in April, a politically influential hedge fund manager named Paul Singer offered a blistering critique of the terrible path, he said, Washington politicians were charting on economic issues. So he's the head of a $17 billion hedge fund. Well, it seems like he's doing okay. Isn't he one of the guys that created the problems? He's a conservative, and he has become one of the biggest bankrollers of Republican causes, giving more than $4 million of his money and raising more millions through fundraisers he hosts for like-minded candidates. Just recently, at his Central Park West apartment, he netted more than $1 million for 7 Republican Senate candidates who opposed the bill. He was opposed to the final approval of the sweeping overhaul of the financial regulations. He's afraid that maybe his $17 billion hedge fund would only have like $16 billion in it or something like that.
Oh,
poor baby.
Baby.
But, again, these are the people that fund the Tea Party movement. And what I'm getting at, if you're can I say it now? Yeah, if you're a teabagger, a right-wing teabagger, they don't have your interest in mind, and they're not going to put it in place. Or maybe they even will. I don't know. You know, they got to throw you a few scraps. But here's what we're really all about. Everybody, right, left, like Anthony was saying, there's some things we're all similarly situated in. And then we could all disagree about abortion or homosexuality or gay marriage or something like that. But we all live in a financial community that is under assault from the very people that are financing the teabagger movement. And you teabaggers got to understand this. And here, this comes from the Institute for Policy Studies. And great site for understanding what's happening economically, usually, but as it says, policy as well. Institute for Policy Studies, you can look it up. The CEOs of the 50 firms that have laid off the most workers since the onset of the economic crisis took home 42% more pay in 2009 than their peers at the S&P 500 firms. This is from a study called CEO Pay and the Great Recession. Do you get this? The more people they laid off, the more money these CEOs made. And some of the money that they saved, they gave to the teabagger movement.
I made quite a bit of it.
Yeah. The top 50 CEO layoff leaders received $12 million on average in 2009 compared to the S&P 500 average of $8.5 million. So they got $3.5 million more. Each of the corporations surveyed laid off at least 3,000 workers between November 2008 and April 2010. 72% of the firms announced mass layoffs at a time of positive earning reports, that they didn't have to lay off people. What they're doing is that this is a speed up. Essentially, they're using less people to do the same amount of work so they can make more money. This goes back then to the march and rally in Detroit, led by Bob King of the UAW and Reverend Jesse Jackson of Operation Push. Their march, the march or our march, the march that that 5,000 of us were in yesterday, was for jobs, justice, and peace. This is substantive. And you say, well, those are just slogans. Those can be filled in very easily. I mean, one fill-in for peace is to take this enormous war budget in wars we never should have been involved in and use that for our country. Not spend, as General Petraeus wants, $100 million on electrical generators for a village in Afghanistan. And people, let me say this, too. Some of the people I know in the union were disappointed that there was only 5,000 people came up. There wasn't as many union members. And I'm a little disappointed more of the listeners here didn't show up, that we didn't have a bigger crowd. But what it really needed, because there was no multimillionaires. I mean, the union put up some money. And I said, you might consider advertising on WRIF, and they said, you know, we don't have the budget for it. No. They don't have a Koch brother there with millions of dollars.
Right.
What the march in Detroit really needed to maybe come to, the 50,000 or 100,000 was it needed to have been announced 3 or 4 months in advance. It needed a full-time staff. It needed a couple hundred volunteers. Yeah. So I think that if you're listening and you were one of the people organizing the UAW march yesterday in Detroit, that you should be very proud of yourself, and that the fact that there was, quote, only 5,000 is just
still a lot of people.
Just the beginning. Yeah. So here are all these CEOs that are laying off people and they're getting more money. Fred Hassan from SharePlow, he's a CEO there. He received a $33 million golden parachute when his firm merged with Merck in late 2009, while 16,000 workers faced pink slips. How do these guys sleep at night? How do they do this? Again, they don't say, oh,
Ambien.
He's a teabagger. Oh, she's a right-wing conservative, so I won't lay her off or I won't lay him off. They don't care about you.
They do not care.
They care about the rich people that are, that come to their...
They can make them richer.
Central Park West apartment and
a home in Fiji.
Yeah, that's right. That's what they care about. So you're really being a dupe for the rich. William Weldon, Johnson & Johnson, who just had a big callback for hip replacement devices. Interesting.
Mm.
Weldon took home $25.6 million, more than three times as much as the S&P 500 CEO average at a time when his firm was slashing 9,000 jobs and facing a massive drug recall scandal. Goes on and on. 5 of the 50 top layoff leaders were recipients of major financial bailouts. The $600 million combined compensation of the top 50 CEO layoff leaders. Now, you get this? These are the men, I think they're all men, that laid off people but got enormously greater compensation. The almost $600 million combined compensation of the top 50 CEO layoff leaders could provide average unemployment benefits to almost 40,000 workers for an entire year. This is pathological greed. Remember last week I was quoting, was it George Soros? Somebody like that, that said his wealth could be reduced by 99% and it would not affect his lifestyle at all.
Amazing.
So it seems to me that these guys have 99% more money than they need. And it's just this this compulsive possessiveness that is truly sick and is ruining this country. Let's get Steve in St. Clair Shore. Steve, thanks for being so patient. You got what, a green fair coming this next month?
Yeah, we have a green fair in the park coming up on Saturday, September 25th. And
okay.
It's going to be from 10 a.m. in the morning to 6 p.m. at night.
And what's the idea of it?
The idea of it is that we're trying to really, really bring awareness of the green movement to St. Clair Shores and Macomb County. And just kind of draw attention to what's going on in the world with businesses going green and individuals going green and kind of what the whole green movement is about.
But
and
you,
essentially what like all of what it encompasses.
You have a website?
We do have it's posted on the City of St. Clair Shores website. We
okay.
do have a Facebook page.
How can we find that?
You can go on Facebook and type in Green Fair in the Park.
All right.
St. Clair Shores.
I was just talking about the UAW not having a budget for this march, but for events like this, I am the public affairs director for WRIF.
That's right.
I can get you a public service announcement if you will send in the information. And I open this nonprofit event to everyone else listening as well. Send it to, I got so many emails. You can just send it
to show email.
Yeah, send it to calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Okay?
Yeah. Okay, and I'd also like to comment on what you were talking about.
Well, let me do this then. I have to get these commercials in before midnight, so let me put you on hold, and then we'll get back to that and hang on and more.
You're listening to Nightfall with Peter Werby and Jolene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Peter and Jolene are taking your calls at 313-298-WRIF.
That's what we do.
We'll be taking more of your calls right after this.
Sometimes a device is so intuitive, so advanced, it's hard to tell where it ends and you begin. Introducing the new Droid 2 by Motorola. This droid has evolved to do even more. Now it does flash, so your eyeballs can feast on the web in all its video-rich glory. Now it integrates your work email so you can be hooked up to everything you need to do. Now it does 1 gigahertz speed on a more intuitive keyboard, turning your thumbs into twin texting turbines and emailing engines. You might even say it turns you into a machine of efficiency. The new Droid 2, part of the next generation of Does. Only from Verizon Wireless.
Now get the new Droid 2 for just $199.99 after a $100 mail-in rebate debit card. Visit any Verizon store, droiddoes.com, or call 1-800-256-4646. Requires new 2-year activation on a voice plan with data pack $29.99 or higher. Early termination and other fees apply. Coverage details at verizonwireless.com.
Welcome to the REI Labor Day Sale. How may I help you?
Hi, I'm looking for a roomy, cozy...
REI Basecamp 4 tent?
Right, that. And some comfortable...
Keen Newport H2 sandals.
Perfect. And with all that hiking...
Black Diamond trekking poles.
Wow, you really know your stuff.
We know what you need because we know what you love. Gear up for late summer fun at the REI Labor Day Sale. Save up to 30% on great gear and clothing, August 27th through September 6th. Visit REI or REI.com. REI. Find out.
Did you know that life insurance rates are near record lows? If you don't have coverage, listen to this. AccuQuote can help save you up to 70% on a term life policy that's right for you. Pick up the phone and call AccuQuote at 800-654-2075. AccuQuote has helped hundreds of thousands of people save a fortune on their life insurance. Here's how. AccuQuote monitors hundreds of top-rated life insurance products so you can get the lowest rates. For example, a healthy 40-year-old can buy $500,000 of 10-year level term for less than $21 a month. Rates for women are even lower. A short 5-minute call is all it takes. Call AccuQuote for a free life insurance quote at 800-654-2075. Rates, policy forms, and availability vary by state. Find out how much you can save on life insurance. Call AccuQuote for your free quote. 800-654-2075. That's 800-654-2075.
Detroit Rock Station. 101 The Riff. 101 The Riff.
When I do it, I feel the blood rushing through me. And I keep going back for more.
Carmen Castillo is under the influence of Dana, her volunteer trainer. By spending just one day a week with kids like Carmen, Dana helps them develop interests that keep them away from drugs. Be a coach, a mentor, a volunteer, because you have something to offer. Log on to helpyourcommunity.org or call 877-KIDS-313. Brought to you by the Office of National Drug Control Policy and the Ad Council.
Energy Hog Team! Get in that house and waste some energy!
No problem! It's got leaky windows and no attic insulation!
This house is under attack by Energy Hogs. They show up anywhere energy's wasted.
The washer! It's not Energy Star rated!
You have the power to get rid of Energy Hogs.
Someone's home!
He's got energy-efficient light bulbs!
Go to EnergyHog.org for fun games and lots of hog-busting tips.
EnergyHog.org? That's it! Get out of here!
Wait for me!
Brought to you by the Alliance to Save Energy, the Department of Energy, and the Ad Council.
Mom?
Dad?
How long should I wait for you?
Mom?
If I'm at soccer practice.
What if something happens?
Will you come get me?
There's no reason not to have a plan in case of an emergency.
Mom, if you're not home, should we go to the neighbor's house?
And some extremely good reasons why you should.
Can you tell me?
Everybody should have a plan. Take 5 minutes to talk about where you'll meet and how you'll get in touch with each other in an emergency. For other things you can do to be prepared, visit www.ready.gov. A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Homeland Security and the Ad Council.
If you've been thirsting for some quality time with someone special, let Franklin Spa help to nourish your relationship. Franklin Spa offers the best in dual spa treatments for everyone. With many different packages and treatments to choose from, you and that someone special can indulge yourselves while creating a memory. Share this special time with your mother or daughter by enjoying a girls' getaway spa day. Side-by-side massages and hot stone facials are just the beginning. Craving some bonding time with your best friend? You'll both enjoy the BFF package. You'll each experience a 30-minute massage massage, a 30-minute facial, and hydrating foot treatment, plus so much more. Time to put the spark back in your relationship with someone special? Franklin Spa will cater to both of you. Allow yourselves to be treated to a couple's massage, champagne, and treats with the Romeo and Juliet package. Visit franklinspa.com to view a complete list of couples' packages and services or to purchase a gift certificate. Franklin Spa is RSVP only. Go to franklinspa.com to make an appointment. That's franklinspa.com. Nourish yourself and your relationship at Franklin Spa.
Over there? Over there's the water. Whoosh, whoosh. And look at all this stuff I'm standing on. It's called sand, and it's everywhere.
This woman may sound silly to you and me.
It's made up of little tiny pieces of rocks. Teeny little pieces of rocks.
But to her 2-year-old son exploring the world around him, she makes perfect sense.
How does it feel when you touch the sand? Is it warm?
Uh-huh.
It's hard to hold in your hand, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Learning starts long before school does, and children are naturally curious. They want to learn, so follow their lead. Take simple, everyday moments, like sorting laundry or playing on the beach, and turn them into learning moments.
Is this water?
No.
Very good. This is sand. Oh, no, it's not food. It's sand. We don't eat sand.
Turn everyday moments into learning moments. Find out how at bornlearning.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
101 WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit. This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter Werby and Julene Jordan.
All right, thank you very much, and welcome back to our second hour. Peter Werby here with you, Julene Jordan as well.
And I do have an email to read from Jeff, as he calls it, from GOP Hell, Indiana. He said, Peter and Julene, I just added that because sometimes they just don't include me. No, it's okay. You can include me, right? The reason you haven't heard from any baggers about what turning back to God means is because they don't know. And they won't know until someone on the right-wing radio or Fox News tells them what it means and what they should think about it. The next original thought that a teabagger has will be their first. Thanks, Jeff. Thanks for writing
in. Well, baggers, what we're saying is to call 313-298-WRIF and tell us what it means to turn, either restore America's honor, and where along the line did it lose its honor, and at what point would you like to go back to?
Yeah, and where does God fit into this? Yeah. Because there is a thing, must we remind you again, there's a thing called the separation of church and state.
Oh, yeah, that's in the Constitution from earlier.
Yeah.
We're also talking about how the Tea Party movement is financed by these ultra-billionaires and multimillionaires who have an agenda about increasing their wealth, and they're using you as pawns.
And you know what? The Koch brothers did not want to be discovered. They really tried to keep this hush-hush, and a lot of these fat cats have been trying to keep it hush-hush, but now there's I think it's a big article in the New Yorker as well about it, and is there a book about it as well, Peter?
I don't know
that there was an article in the New Yorker that you could probably read online about these guys. I can't give that information because it's other radio, but search it out. Google it.
Okay. And we're also talking about how the CEOs that have laid off people are the ones that are being compensated the most. And as I would like some week not to have to read this. This is from Forbes. This is, Capitalist Tool, as it calls itself. And it says, most of the richest people on the planet have seen their fortune soar in the past year. This is income redistribution. Remember, this is what some of these right-wingers are always talking about. They want income redistribution. Well, yeah. How about if we get some raises and have our pensions secured and have our houses not foreclosed on? That would be
taxes, things like that.
That would be tax the rich.
And, right. Yeah. Yes, and unless you make so much, you're out. You don't have to pay.
Sure. In the meantime, fire departments around the nation are cutting jobs, closing firehouses, and increasingly resorting to what's called rolling brownouts, where they shut down different fire companies on different days as the economic downturn forces many cities and towns to make deep cuts.
This is really scary. There was a fire department down the street just today when I came to work, Peter, and just think if they couldn't get there,
sure.
That's
awful.
And
it's not, maybe expect that cities like Baltimore or Detroit. Detroit is cutting back its
EMS service.
Yeah, the emergency response.
I thought they overturned that.
Maybe they did, but they're also trying to outsource, take union jobs with the Detroit Public Schools and outsource it. So they're going to have people protecting the schools instead of having union wages. It's going to be $8 an hour, and. What's going on here? For instance, rather than contributing hundreds of millions of dollars to increase your wealth by generating this phony teabagger movement, why don't these guys give the money to like the San Jose, California fire department that had to lay off 49 firefighters last night?
Oh my gosh, yeah. 49.
Yeah, that's incredible. Here's the one I was looking for. Anyway. So teabaggers,
and these are
what
all those,
is happening?
These are all those social services, all those things that you could include in socialism in your so-called skewed version of socialism. Right. All the folks out there, you know.
Let's see. Here's John in Madison Heights. He wants to talk about the Detroit rally that happened on Saturday. It was sponsored by the UAW and Reverend Jesse Jackson. About 5,000 people were out in our city calling for jobs, for justice, and for peace. Hi, John. You're on the air.
Hi, Peter. Hi, Julian.
Hello.
I went to the rally.
Uh-huh.
I kind of watch it more as like an observer.
Sure.
Because I believe in a lot of this stuff. I'm deep progressive, I guess. I have Green Party, socialist in me or something like that. I can't really describe it exactly, but I don't know. I feel like it doesn't feel like it's going to change anything. You know, it just feels like you go back to the 60s or you go back to the progressive era. And, you know, the 60s had that, explosive kind of feel to it. The progressive era, they basically fought for their lives, you know, in their fights. And it just seems like these are just, we'll yell and talk about it, but nothing seems to change, you know. It doesn't.
Well, in fairness, John, it was... something new, and it was a beginning. Bob King, rather than the kind of conservative unionism practiced by his predecessor, who we should say fired Jolene and I when
Ron
we
Gettelfinger, but not because we were bad broadcasters. They sold the whole network.
Yeah, to get rid of us.
But you can. But anyway, then again, you say he didn't like us.
But John, there was a. I thought there was a lot of energy. But if you remember Bob King, the UAW president's speech, what he came to the end of it all was he was saying, "Get out and vote in November for Democrats," and that just won't make it.
The Democratic Party doesn't really. Talk for me anymore.
Well, I know, and that's why the Democrats are going to lose. It's not because these right-wingers are mobilized. There might be a little of it, but so many people that were filled with such hope and energy in 2008 have just said, man, these guys are not providing anything.
But Peter, how do we know they're going to lose? We don't know they're going to lose.
Oh, I don't even know they're going to lose. Yeah. They may even.
That was like a really negative statement.
Well, that is, yeah, that also is sort of the media... mantra that and they're going
right.
to try to make it happen. But I'm saying if the Democrats lose, it's not going to be because the American people were fed up with the Democrats. It's going to be that the Democrats were fed up with the Democratic Party. And all right, John, thank you very much. And what's got to happen is there's going to have to be a reinvention of what it means to confront the problems here. And I don't expect Bob King to take that on by himself. He's a tremendously committed person. He comes out of the social justice movement.
Yes, civil rights.
Yeah. And he's a tremendous guy. And I don't fault him in the slightest, but the answer is not getting Democrats into office.
Peter, you know, you were there in the 60s and the 70s, out there doing your thing.
Well, I was
and
just,
protests
you know,
and things
well,
like that.
Holding my mommy's hand.
Yeah, right. Yeah, sucking your thumb.
Yeah.
No, but why, can you describe why it's different now, even though we have so many people against war and against so much? Why do you think, what's the main difference? Can you explain to me?
No.
Okay.
Mainly because people in hindsight.
Because it grew and it grew and it grew? Or?
People will, in hindsight, will say, you know, why something occurred. You can see the social forces, the economic forces building up to a particular era when of great change. But you'd think, why didn't something happen the day before, the week before, the year before? I mean, the same grievances were there. Oftentimes people were organized in the same manner. It's kind of, you know, we live in a scientific era, so we can think we have, like, a scientific social critiques or analysis as well. But I just think, you know, you have to build your communities, you have to build your organizations, just be ready for, you know, the change.
Well, it just seems that even though in the last 8 years, how many times did you and I go to Washington individually, together, or, you know, together or separately, and march on Washington? And it seems like back then those marches made a bigger difference than they do now.
Yeah.
Is it the media? Maybe.
Maybe. All right, let's continue on. 313-298-WRIF. Here's Jimmy in Detroit. Hi, Jimmy. You're on the air.
Hey, how you guys doing?
We're doing good.
Great.
Yeah, I was just calling. I was listening. I agree with a lot with what you're saying. I'm sure the you know, the rich definitely are behind a lot of this stuff.
Well, it's the corporate rich, you know, the corporate wealthy.
Right, not like the doctors and stuff. Right, they're just being duped, too. You know, that's probably a lot of the people that are, you know, saying they're Republican and don't realize what they're paying for.
And cops don't make as much money, doctors don't make as much money as they used to.
Right, oh, I'm sure, with all the lawsuits.
Did you know that?
What?
The doctors don't make quite as much as they used to.
What did you say about cops?
I don't know. I had cops on my brain.
Okay.
Oh, well, don't even get me started on them.
Wait.
No. They're my friends. Come on.
They're a little bad, but my point.
1% maybe.
Go ahead, Jimmy. Yeah,
well,
go ahead.
I was just listening, and I was hearing about, you know, people's welfare and stuff, and I know, like, our country, the unemployment's high, and everyone, you know, a lot of people are hurting. But I live in Detroit, and I see, like, a lot of people taking advantage also of the welfare system. And I don't know where I stand on it. I don't know what I am, Republican, Democrat, because...
Well, you could be...
How old are you?
I'm 28.
Well, you know, you could be neither. Jalene and I...
We're independent.
We're certainly neither. Well, let me say this. Having actually worked for the welfare department long ago and far away...
Yeah, you were an investigator.
Far away, actually, in the city of Detroit. And when I was supposed to be a fraud investigator, and actually I found very little. And within any bureaucratic system, there's always fraud, there's always corruption. The question is, what level is it at? I mean, is there real need? And for one thing, the welfare abuse, which shouldn't be at all, and, you know, steps should be taken to, you know, to end it, is relatively a minor hustle. Because if you know, someone actually is working and they're getting unemployment and they're getting paid under the table, that's not a good thing to do. But we're not talking about great fortunes. The where we're being looted and robbed of our tax dollars, again, is by the ultra-rich, by the tax breaks they get, by the tax cuts they get, by the fact that they are making, you know, hundreds of billions of dollars off of the military-industrial complex, off the prison-industrial complex, and on like that.
And you know what? The people on welfare, they're not living high on the hog, okay? I don't think anyone would want to live under those circumstances. They really don't have a lot. They rarely make it to the end of the month with the bridge card money that they're given. It's not the greatest life, so it's nothing to, you know, to scoff at by any means.
All right, Jimmy, thank you. Thanks for bringing that up. Appreciate it. Let's see. Here is Sean. Sean's in Flat Rock. Hi, Sean. You're on the air.
Hey, how you guys doing?
We're doing good.
Great.
I just wondered, you were asking what era would the teabaggers like to go back to?
Yeah.
And pretty much with Obama, Clinton, Bush, it's all the same, you know, black or white, Republican, Democrat. They're all run by the corporations. But the era that I think it should go back to would be the era of giving back my fillet of fish, and you're still a douchebag.
This has become a theme, Peter.
You know, I thought his voice sounded familiar.
Was that really him, or was it someone else repeating it?
Yeah. All right.
He duped us. Speaking of being duped.
Who cares?
Give me back my fillet of fish.
Here's Alex. Alex is in Clinton Township. Alex, hi. You're on the air.
Hey, how are you guys?
We're good.
Great.
All right, good. You were asking a teabagger to call in, and I'm thinking that this is about the closest you're going to get.
Okay.
I'm not a fan of the movement, mainly because they block my way to school when they decide to get up out there and protest, and that's real annoying. But I really think that although they're kind of annoying at times and a bit overbearing, and by no means am I a member, I'm a free thinker, I guess. I don't associate myself with either party. But I really feel like they have some kind of idea going properly, and when they think of restoring honor to the government, it's not because the government is lacking honor now. It's more because it's not as, valiant as it was in the 1700s, you know?
Okay, but name one thing. Name one thing.
I think you're doing your best, Alex, so keep going.
You're being very sweet, but name one thing.
Name one thing what?
That's good. About the teabagger.
No, wait. Now you're arguing. No? We said we weren't going to argue.
We did?
Yeah.
You? Who is we?
Yeah. So, yeah.
I think I don't agree with the Tea Party movement as a whole, but I think that to an extent it's an accurate movement. I don't agree with their turning back to God because I don't think that the country was founded on a principle that the nation has to worship one God, and that's fairly apparent. But I think that when it comes to things like senators getting involved in sex scandals and idiots ascending to higher level offices, and by no means am I talking about President Obama. I swear that on my life.
No,
when it comes to things like that, where the people aren't as informed as they should be, officials are being elected that are corrupt and having all these sorts of scandals, whether it be drugs, sex, anything like that, I think that in my opinion, and I haven't been to a single one of the meetings, I wouldn't know, but that to me would be what they would be going for.
Well, I understand that, but I'm sure you understand, Alex, because you seem to be abreast of things, that those Republicans and all their darlings are so steeped in scandal that it's absolutely incredible. All right, thank you very much. Appreciate your call. And, I'm sorry, I forgot about Steve. I forgot about you. My apologies. I was coming back to you. You announced your green fair in September in St. Clair Shores. And
I did get the info.
And, okay, good. So
I got an email?
Yes.
Oh, I already got it. Okay, you're on the air again. You cannot come back. I'd put Steve on hold, and I said I was going to get back to him, and I totally forgot him. My apologies. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Okay, thanks for getting back to me. First, I wanted to talk about the Tea Party movement, my perspective on the Tea Party movement is kind of like it's kind of hard to figure out, you know, if they're genuinely all about reducing waste in government and getting the government out of our lives. Like why they didn't come out during the Bush administration when they were passing the Patriot Act and they were spending all this money in Iraq and they were handing out all these contracts to businesses kind of under the table.
Sure.
It doesn't make sense that we didn't see the teabag movement in the days of the Bush administration.
I would say that a great numbers of them are hypocritical, and certainly those Republicans are just riffed with scandal, and it doesn't seem to faze them. You know, they seem pretty much all right with it.
Yeah.
It does get a little. I mean, it's very ideological. If they can, they will never forget that Ted Kennedy was involved in a very unfortunate. That's ingrained in American history, that Ted Kennedy's incident at Chappaquiddick. Senator Vitter of New Orleans, Louisiana.
What's the new one? The guy who was the head of the RNC or is currently?
Oh, yeah.
He's been pushing anti-gay legislation for years. And guess what? Whoa, what is it, Peter?
What do you mean?
No.
He was the chair of the Republican National Committee.
Yeah.
He was George Bush's campaign manager, and he's revealed that he's gay and working to advance the cause of same-sex marriage. I mean, that's good. I mean, damage that these gay Republicans, and there's probably more gays, and this is so bizarre, that there's probably more gays that are Republicans than
repressed Republicans.
I don't know, they're not repressed. They're they're functioning as, you know.
Oh, well, all they have to do is hire a, what is it, a luggage boy? What was
that?
That
guy. All right, Steve, I have your public service announcement. Thank you. And I will, I'll email you back and tell you where it'll be listed. And maybe I can even get an on-air PSA for you. Thank you very much. A PSA relating to public service announcement, not the test that men take for prostate
right.
cancer.
Right. Good to clarify.
Yes. I got some open lines finally. 313-298-WRIF, which is
313-298-9743.
I'm beginning to memorize
good
it finally.
Peter.
And
40 years later.
Come on. I mean, maybe there are no teabaggers listening. What does it mean for America to not, I want to get the, what was the exact language? To return to God?
Or? Return to God. You know, well, it was a very exhausting week that weekend for the baggers. You know, they watched their God, Glenn Beck, and their goddess, Sarah Palin. They're emotional. They must probably a lot of crying and emotions. Mm-hmm. I mean, Peter, they might be asleep.
Yeah, you're right. Here's Jim in Detroit. Jim, hi, you're on the air. Hey, Jim.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Busy listening to you all. Two of the biggest things that this country's ran by is gluttony and greed.
Yeah, that's true.
And we're all getting sucked into there. And on top of that, you add adultery to it, and now we got the soap opera that we watch every day.
Which one is that these days?
Yeah, take your pick.
Okay.
That's why number one.
You know what? In fairness, I think if you spoke to any Tea Party member, they would say they are absolutely against the kind of corporate greed and corporate malfeasance and misfeasance that's going on that sunk the economy. And for some reason or other, they increasingly blame Barack Obama. They think Barack Obama was the one that began this bailout of the big companies, the big corporations.
It was Bush. It really was.
Yeah. So they ought to get a real grasp on it. I mean, for one thing, as hard a pill as those bailouts were to swallow, it really did save the economy. Where I think Barack Obama fell down and fell short, and this is why I think that so many Democrats feel alienated from him, is that he should have grabbed him by the short hairs and made sure, you know, like no corporate bonuses. I mean, you know, he expressed disapproval, but it had to be stronger than that. And it has to be, I mean, he is not Franklin Delano Roosevelt. He needs to be. Or he's going to wind up to be a one-term president. And not because the American people turn against him, but rather because he's going to just erode his base so much.
Did you say by the short hairs?
Yeah, is that all right to say?
Yes.
All right. Thank you, Jim. I'm not even sure what that means.
I do. I'll tell you later.
Oh, you mean like...
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. What? Ever, as they say.
I wasn't talking about a military haircut.
Here's Rodman in Westland. Thanks for calling 313-298-WRIF. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah, that was Rodney, by the way.
Oh, okay. I thought Dennis had called.
But I had to ask about the our fractional reserve banking system and how that is reflecting on what is happening in the city of Detroit today.
I don't know, man. That's
are you talking about the Federal Reserve again?
All of that.
Our fractional reserve system says that a bank only has to have a fraction of its loan that it makes.
Well, I have talked about, listen, this is a modern capitalist economy that on one hand looks like a house of cards because it's all based on fraudulent wealth that's not even there. No, there's all this wealth that people say they have. It used to be just numbers written on a sheet. Now it's just cyber numbers and all that wealth in either whatever, any medium. I mean, it's not there in cash. It's not there in gold. It's not there in anything. But we kind of all agree is that, and I usually use this example. My paycheck gets direct deposit. I go to a gasoline station. I put in a credit card. At the end of the month, I write a check to the credit card, and I have, you know, a few $20 bills in my pocket that I have to use for, I don't even know.
Is that all you get for your allowance?
Yeah, exactly. So it And I know there's some people that think the whole crisis is rooted in the financial system, or that there's no real solid backing for our monetary system. But this is modern capitalism, and I don't think anything different is ever going to happen to it until it all collapses.
But if they're flirting with setting the reserve rate to zero,
yeah,
how does that not end up with the bank owning everything?
I don't know. You know, I Rodney, most people are concerned, are they going to continue to get a paycheck in whatever form it is, you know? And like I say, it's a pretty involved concept. All right, thank you very much. Appreciate it. Here's Maurice in Detroit. Maurice, you're on the air.
Hello, Peter, Julian, how you doing?
Maurice, good to talk to you.
You driving your cab?
I was in a public establishment tonight, and it was a soldier from Iraq. He was on the lead. He said he did three tours in Iraq, and I asked him the question, do you know what you're doing there? He said he didn't ever have a clue. I said, yeah, but you're over there killing people. I said, it was over there looking for weapons of mass destruction. You're over there in a foreign country killing people and don't even know why you are looking there, why you over there. You're a good soldier, aren't you?
Well,
he got pissed.
I could sure imagine. Did.
But you know why he was there? He was there because he was ordered there by the commanders-in-chief, George W. Bush, of course, who made up this entire fabrication about weapons of mass destruction. There was never any need for this attack, and these thousands and thousands of people that have been killed, our soldiers, their civilians, their insurgents, and, you know, objected to the invasion and the occupation. And they are there essentially to carry out orders, and they are there to protect themselves and their comrades. And that winds up to be the long and the short of it.
And I'm sure they're scared poopless while they're doing it because they don't know who's who. And civilians, you know, they don't know who's who.
All right. Thank you, Maurice. You know, war is over. Which, of course, it isn't in Iraq.
No, but it isn't.
And Barack Obama is going to make a speech saying, you know, he said he was going to end the war, but there's going to be thousands and thousands of contractors there. We have the world's largest embassy in Baghdad. They're going to have these bases and all that.
Yeah, I read that those contractors are going to increase by like 30%.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, I belong to an organization called Labor Against the War. It's mm-hmm. for, you know, I hate to be this exclusive, but it's for union members. And so we have established democracy in Iraq. It was this terrible dictatorship. Forget about the fact that the United States supplied all these armaments to Iraq and what have you, and you know, that Saddam Hussein was Reagan's buddy and everything like that. But here, this is by David Bacon from the website of U.S. Labor Against the War. Is the U.S. pulling the plug on Iraqi workers? And it says, early in the morning of July 21st, Iraqi police, pardon me, stormed the offices of the Iraqi Electrical Utility Workers Union in Basra, the poverty-stricken capital of Iraq's oil-rich south. A shamefaced officer told Hashima Mohsin, the first woman to head a national union in Iraq, that they'd come to carry out the orders of the electricity ministers Hussein, the electricity minister Hussein al Sharistani, to shut the union down. They took membership records, locked up people. And it says, the Iraqi government, while it seems paralyzed on many fronts, has unleashed a wave of actions against the country's unions that are intended to take Iraq back to the era when Saddam Hussein prohibited them for most workers and arrested activists who protested. So this is what it's all about. And, yeah, and Julian is right. Civilians take U.S. lead as military leaves Iraq, so we are still going to be there because we are footing the bill.
Also, and out of all of that, we wanted the oil. We talked about this early in the week, Peter. Only two American companies were able to get oil. China got most of it. And the American companies who were able to get the oil, pipelines, they got very small fields, the smallest, and they had to share with other countries. Like there, one was a Dutch company. I can't remember the other, but, you know, was it really worth those two small oil fields? That's
and,
what I wanted.
Well, it was said, you know, it was a war for oil, and in part it was. It was to have the, well, it was supposed to be for at least the West and optimally the United States, but as you said correctly, China's got a big piece of it. But also, as it's a war for war. We have to maintain this military-industrial complex. where the trillions of dollars of our tax money that should be going to, so we're not laying off first responders as is going on, so we don't have to close our schools, where we don't have 40 kids in a classroom and what have you, but instead it's going down to the rat hole of military spending. So we have to have wars. We have to have enemies. It's necessary, or we'd have to cut way, way back. Ooh, and I have...
It's big bucks.
Yeah, it is mega big bucks, and I don't know what...
That's really, when you say, some people probably wonder what, when you say the military-industrial complex, that means they just want to keep all of these companies and the CEOs making a boatload of money because they're friends with the politicians, a.k.a. George W. Bush and Dick Cheney.
This in England right now, there is a commission that's looking at the Iraq War and Britain's involvement in it. And it's the former MI5, Military Intelligence 5, Director General Eliza Manningham Butler, delivered a withering assessment of the case for war against Iraq, saying it had significantly increased the terrorist threat to Britain. She also says that she said the toppling of Saddam allowed Osama bin Laden to gain a stronghold in Iraq and radicalize young Muslims in Britain. In evidence that undermined the case for war presented by the former Prime Minister Tony Blair, she was asked whether it was feared Saddam could have linked terrorists to weapons of mass destruction, facilitating their use against the West. She replied, "It certainly wasn't of concern in either the short term or the medium term to me or my colleagues." And she said that's radicalized parts of generations of Muslims who see the military actions as an attack on Islam. Okay, we'll be back to get your calls. Let's see, Ron and Dan and Marcelo and Eric, stay on. We'll get you when we come back.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Julian Jordan on 101 WRIF. Let your opinion be heard. Call us at 313-298-WRIF.
Whatever's going on, it seems to be far from over.
Peter and Julian will be taking more of your calls right after this.
If you've been thirsting for some quality time with someone special, let Franklin Spa help to nourish your relationship. Franklin Spa offers the best in dual spa treatments for everyone. With many different packages and treatments to choose from, you and that someone special can indulge yourselves while creating a memory. Share this special time with your mother or daughter by enjoying a girls' getaway spa day. Side-by-side massages and hot stone facials are just the beginning. Craving some bonding time with your best friend? You'll both enjoy the BFF package. You'll each experience a 30-minute massage, a 30-minute facial, and hydrating foot treatment, plus so much more. Time to put the spark back in your relationship with someone special? Franklin Spa will cater to both of you. Allow yourselves to be treated to a couple's massage, champagne, and treats with the Romeo and Juliet package. Visit franklinspa.com to view a complete list of couples' packages and services or to purchase a gift certificate. Franklin Spa is RSVP only. Go to franklinspa.com to make an appointment. That's franklinspa.com. Nourish yourself and your relationship at Franklin Spa.
Feels like time's running out. Maxed out on your credit cards, collection calls are coming every day, and you're two payments behind on your mortgage. You need help. We're Credit Card Relief, and we've been helping people just like you for nearly a decade. Call Credit Card Relief right now. The consultation is free, and the relief is real.
Call 866-290-8282. Not available in all states. Call 866-290-8282. That's 866-290-8282.
If you want a new computer but think you can't get credit, think again. Just call Tronics Country right now. No matter what your credit status is, now you can own a brand new desktop or laptop computer. Your approval is guaranteed as long as you have an active checking account and can afford small weekly payments. With Tronics Country, there's no credit check. You will not be turned down. Call right now and order your new computer. You'll also get a free color printer and a free digital camera. Just call 800-990-2258. But that's not all. Call right now and you'll also get a free 22-inch high-definition TV with your paid purchase. You heard right. A free TV with your new computer. All you need is an active checking account and your approval is guaranteed. Don't wait. Call Tronics Country right now. Call 800-990-2258. That's 800-990-2258. 800-990-2258.
101 WRIF.
Everything that rocks.
The Riff.
Did you know the tap water in your home may be hazardous? Not to your health, but to your appliances and your wallet. Your home's hard water creates pipe-clogging lime scale, and that can shorten the life of your water heater, ruin your dishwasher, and break down your washing machine. Lime scale deposits block the heating element, and that could be costing you an extra $1,200 a year in energy and wear. But you can remove lime scale without chemicals, magnets, or salts. It's easy with HydraCare, the patented device used worldwide. See for yourself at bestsoftwater.com. You simply clip HydraCare to your main water pipe. HydraCare removes and prevents lime scale buildup in your entire plumbing system. If your home has hard water, extend the life of your appliances with HydraCare. Try it risk-free. Just go to bestsoftwater.com. That's bestsoftwater.com. Or call now, 888-883-8187. That's 888-883-8187.
Hey, Dad.
What?
I can't get the ketchup bottle open.
Here, let me try. Yeah, stuck all right.
Anything?
Now watch. If you take your palm like this and smack it on the bottom right here, you can get it open pretty easily. Here you go.
Thanks.
You don't have to be a hero to be a hero. When you adopt a child from foster care, just being there makes all the difference. To find out how you can adopt, please visit our website at AdoptUSKids.org or call 1-888-200-4005. A public service announcement brought to you by Adopt U.S. Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Here are Peter and Julie.
All right, thank you very much, and welcome back. Well, this is our final segment. Then at 1 o'clock, I'm going to have, what should I do first? I'm going to a show about privacy. That's
okay.
One thing we're always concerned about.
Mm-hmm.
And then at 1:30 Eastern Time, our friend John O'Leary will be interviewing three drummers about a great drum book, including Johnny B.
I am dying to see that book, by the way.
Yeah.
Do you have a copy of that?
The book's $75. It wouldn't even give me a review copy. Maybe John O'Leary has it. But anyway, that's all I had. All right, let's try to get through people as quickly as possible with giving everybody a chance. So Eric and Marcello and Dan and Ron and Theo and Eric, hang on. Here is Dan in Mount Clemens. Hi, Dan. You're on the air.
Hi, Peter.
Hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
That's good. I was at the march on Saturday. I thought it was a pretty good march. I agree there weren't that many people there.
Wait a minute. Let's tell people you're talking about the UAW march in downtown Detroit for jobs, justice, and peace. Right.
That's right. That's right. Jobs, justice, and peace.
Well, there was about, the Free Press said there was 5,000 people.
Yeah. I agree.
Should have been 50,000. I agree.
Yeah. There were about 5,000. I was also at the what I don't understand is I was at the march. I don't know if you remember, there was a march in 93, the march down Woodward on the day that Martin Luther King gave the I Had a Dream speech here in Detroit.
Okay.
Not 93
or 1963?
That was in 93. They had a 30-year thing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
The dream of 63 becomes reality in 93.
Yeah.
And that march, there were about 100,000 people.
Really?
And
I missed it.
What I don't understand is why not, you know.
Why isn't it that large now? I don't know. Is what I said. There wasn't enough preparation time. There wasn't the staff. There wasn't the budget.
The budget for promotion.
Yeah. that all needed to be done. And I think, well, here, one of the things that I keep forgetting to mention is that this is all a lead up to an event that's going to happen in Washington, D.C. And let me see if I can get to this very, very quickly. I think it's October 2nd, Saturday, October 2nd, if that is a Saturday. And if it's not, I will give it to you in just a second. It is, October 2nd in Washington, D.C. And for the same
emphasis.
Thank you.
Emphasis.
Thank you. I had a brain, what do they call it? Brain fart?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's indelicate.
Isn't it? It really is.
And I wasn't going to go, but I was moved enough by the one in Detroit on Saturday calling for jobs, justice, and peace to go again. And the UAW is going to make a big push, and so are a lot of other groups. And I don't think it's hard to say, again, how many people the teabaggers had. They say 500,000, 600,000.
There were billions.
Billions. And however, airphotoslive.com says 79,000 to 96,000. So we'll see. All right. Thank you very much. Glad to have marched with you, Dan, in that event on Saturday. Here is it Marcelo or Marcello?
Marcelo.
Marcelo. Hi. You're on the air.
How you doing?
Good.
I'm not your conventional teabag, I guess. I'm an African American, and I believe one of the callers earlier, I agree with him. You got to give him back his fillet of fish.
and what about? But you didn't include the D-bag part. Come on.
He's gone. How did he do? Stephanie, you got fooled.
Yeah, but I'm liking it. I like it.
Yeah.
We need those just stupid moments.
Here's Eric in Toledo. You're on the air, Eric. Go ahead.
Hey, how you doing?
We're good.
Long time listener, first time caller.
Welcome.
Right on. Peter and I have decided we need some kind of sound, you know, for that. We can't. We just don't take things that far.
Yeah.
We just say thanks.
I was in answer to your getting back to God, this has been going on for a long time, I think. One of the biggest problems is the far right's been trying to get their hooks into our public schools for a long time with creationism, and then recently in 2005 with intelligent design in Dover.
Sure.
And just recently, March of 2010, they actually got the SBOE of Texas to change and remove Thomas Jefferson from their textbooks.
Right, because he was too much of a free thinker.
And put Calvin in his place.
Oh, Texas.
Well, the importance of that, of course, is that Texas is such a large purchaser of textbooks that these national firms, these publishers, will alter their books and then everyone
else. They're drooling to alter those books, right, Peter?
Yeah. Hey, Eric, are you familiar with the Freedom From Religion Foundation?
Absolutely.
Okay.
FFRF.org.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. I also am part of a couple local groups here, Michigan Skeptics, and I follow a few other entities online that deal with these kinds of things.
And I always like to say, you know, it's not like we're these complete freaks, anti-religion freaks, you know, all the way.
We're not
crazy. Well, Freedom From Religion Foundation. Well, I am on many levels, but the Freedom From Religion Foundation is all mainly focused on the separation of church and state.
If you think, I agree with you 100%. The problems that religion. Well, first off, let's talk about the good parts that perhaps religion has granted the people.
Sister's become a lot better person since she became the big old Bible beater.
Well, there is someone else we know,
but
too.
She's
that
way more of a
well.
Hypocrite. Yeah. At the same time.
Yeah, I mean, so first off, I mean, it's this cosmic blackmail, right? So they scare the hell out. If you don't do exactly what we say, you're going to hell.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
So let's say it solves some conscience and gives some people. See, I think, and if you're all the good progressive Christians and Jews and Muslims that are listening, you'd be the same kind of person without religion. I mean, a lot of people, they say to me, it's, you know, my belief in the message of Jesus or the message of Muhammad or the message of the Torah.
Jah.
Okay.
John.
Yeah. Okay.
I have Rastafarian friends.
But these people would be just as good if they were atheists, right?
I agree. As long as it's about being a good person conducting.
But mostly, as I said earlier, is that organized religion still creates all these problems. People are always so up in arms about their religions.
And it's not just little problems. It's big major war-related genocide problems.
All right, Eric, thank you very much. Thanks for being a first-time caller.
Yeah,
and,
call again.
Let's see. Here is Ron and Warren. Hi, Ron. You're on the air.
Hi, Pete, Jolene. Hey. Hey, I really appreciate your show.
Well, thank you. We appreciate you calling.
Yeah, giving the open voice to everybody. Hey, the one thing that I wanted to mention, you know, the biggest problem I feel that we have is nobody knows what line to get in. The minorities don't want to vote for the Republicans. The working guy, he feels he's got to be a Democrat, and the Republicans, you know, they get all these middle-class people all stirred up about all this rhetoric, and, you know, they know they're getting the wool pulled over the eyes, and the free thinkers just don't vote at all. Nobody wants to get on losing lines, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, I got to say is that people tend to be fooled in general most of the time. I mean, it's sort of the Lincoln dictum about you can fool all the people some of the time.
Yeah, don't try to do it and screw it up like George Bush
did.
Won't.
And I thought about it. You know, I hesitated just for a second there. But at certain key points in history, people say, you know, you're not fooling me anymore. And,
the who won't get fooled again.
Yeah, and people try. For instance, the people that I know that are strong Democrats, including the people in my family, are all, sounds kind of prejudicial considering my family, but they're motivated by the best ideals of humanity. Of fairness and tolerance
and love
and environmental sense and all of that. And they just keep hoping, you know, the Democratic party will act out the script, which it never does. And they always get kind of disappointed. All right. Thank you very much. And speaking of religion, you know, there's this whack job Reverend Terry Jones in Gainesville, Florida. That's going to burn Bibles on September 11th.
Wait, wasn't it Quran? The Quran?
Okay, well, gee, that's called a Freudian slip.
yeah, he's burning the Quran.
Yeah. Sorry.
Many couples.
I'm so worried about what I do when I'm here by myself.
No, you're fine every time. I listen to the podcast.
The podcast works. Yeah, there'll be a podcast. By the way, if you want to listen to this on podcast, you want to see some of the stuff about the Teabagger Rally that I think is good, go to my website, Peter Werbe, werbe.com. You can sign up for the podcast, no cost, and get sent to you as soon as dear Stephanie, who is our phone screener and putting together our podcast.
Yeah.
By the way, the interviews are not going to be on there again. We're still dealing with this.
You're going to try to get that.
Yeah.
We're talking about the recorded interviews that follow the live portion.
We don't have a lot of time. But anyway, this guy, he says that Islam, he's going to burn it because Islam's sacred book is full of lies. And then he says he never read it. But he knows it's not the Bible.
Yeah.
But so I wonder. I was
rocket
thinking.
Rocket scientist, not.
I wouldn't do this. But what would you think if we had a rally that we were going to burn the Bible?
Well,
wouldn't we,
why don't we just throw a few flags in there while we're at it?
We would become famous. Do you realize this?
Yeah.
Just like this guy, his 50 parishioners, they are now known around the world, and of course, pissing off Muslims all over the world.
Yes.
Even though there's so few of them, and actually the reaction. But you know, through the media, through the spectacle, you can do anything. I mean, literally, if we decided we were going to have a rally where we're going to burn Bibles, we have the possibility. You know, I'm beginning to think of.
No, we're not doing it.
Okay,
Peter, the celebrity status we have. This is where we are comfortable.
Low and level.
Yeah, that's right.
Big fish in a small pond. Actually, we're small fish in a big pond.
That's right. We're medium fish.
Yeah. All right. Let's get some more calls on. Here's Eric in Ypsilanti. Eric, hi. You're on the air.
Good morning, PW and JJ.
Hey.
Hello, Eric.
How you doing?
I'm fine. I believe that both rallies had some legitimate way in speaking out, but I like... like the rally that Al Sharpton had was better. The Sarah Palin and Glenn Beck are both neoconservatives. I myself am somewhat a conservative. Now, But I support Ron Paul.
Well,
some of what Ron Paul says makes sense. Yeah, right. I heard him in an interview today.
You know, I'll tell you, Eric, though, it's amazing that we have offered the phone lines to speak to thousands and thousands of people for any teabagger to tell us what in the hell Glenn Beck meant by returning, either restoring honor. I mean, when, how did we lose the honor? Who lost it? And when was the period we want to go back to? They want to go back to 2000 to 2008? Or 2001 to 2009, I guess it is. And also what it means to return America to God in any real terms, programmatic policy and what have, and we've gotten nothing. You know what that makes me think? There's nothing there. There's no there there. I think.
Wait, that was deep. There's no there there.
Eric, thank you. Appreciate it. Let's see. Here is John. John is in Port Huron. Hi, John. You're on the air. Oh, wait a minute. I'm sorry. John, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, how you doing there? I'm just one of the points. I guess I don't know if I'm too far to the left or the right. I just think that both sides want to always take things to the extreme. But, you know, if you just take the typical, you know, do on others as you'd have done to you, that'd solve a lot of the problems right there.
Do you think?
Agreed.
That would be it.
Yeah.
That is the universal law, and to some extent, if we could put that into being, John, we wouldn't need any other laws, any constitutions, nothing.
So I just think that, you know, I'm not the type of Christian by any strict imagination, but, you know, the very basics, you know, don't kill each other and, you know, don't do something to somebody you wouldn't want done.
Don't do your neighbor's wife, whatever you do.
Right.
My gosh.
Unless you're an Eskimo.
Yeah.
An Inuit.
Or an Inuit.
Inuit. Thank you. Now, I got to get some other calls real quickly on here. Thank you for that, John. That would be the one law. Here's Vivian in Inkster. Hi, Vivian. You're on the air.
How you guys doing?
Good.
Great.
You guys were talking about the Koch brothers earlier?
Yeah, we were funding the teabaggers, the billionaires.
Yeah.
The billionaires who...
I've been talking about that for a while, but I called to tell you that I know of two more big corporations that are also funding them.
Who's that?
The one is Give Me Back My Filet of Fish.
And the other one is D-Bag Incorporated.
Here's Greg in Sterling Heights. Greg, you're on the air. Go ahead.
I feel a little hungry all of a sudden.
Hi, I'm listening to about that priest burning Bible thing. It's a
no, the Quran.
The Quran. The Quran. He's going to burn the Quran.
Sorry. It's a political statement, but according to the Christian Bible, do unto others as you want done to you. You know.
There you go. That's what
they wronged
saying.
Us. Yeah, they've wronged us.
Let's be accurate, particularly with pronouns. They haven't wronged us. Some Muslims.
Oh.
Some crazy, right-wing fundamentalists of the Muslim faith have.
That's
and,
right.
Which is not exactly an obscure one.
Extremists, we call them.
But,
and they are less than 1% of the Muslim population. God, people, let that sink into your head, please.
Well, most of the Muslim countries, including the ones that would not allow a Christian church or a synagogue or anything like that in their country, are our allies, like Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
In fact, almost every Muslim country is our ally that we, and I mean we, the correct pronoun here, Greg, are sending them money, like Saudi Arabia and Jordan, Egypt, horrid countries, absolutely horrid countries, Indonesia, where else? Maybe Syria and Iran doesn't get it. Oh, hello, Iraq.
Iraq, yeah.
Where
there
right,
we allow mosques
appreciate,
all over.
Appreciate it. Here's Andrew in Flat Rock. Andrew, hi, you're on the air.
How you doing?
Good, we're good.
What's up, Andrew?
How you doing, ma'am?
We're good.
Excellent. Carry on.
I read something on Yahoo a while back. It was actually more politically charged than anything, and I'm a veteran, so you know it kind of perked my interest. And it was the fact that that what Ross Perot back in his day had predicted about certain things like NAFTA.
Yeah.
Coming true today.
Well, they should have listened to the little guy.
with being, you know,
the little guy,
you know, with free trade and, you know, shipping our jobs overseas and ending up with the kind of economy that we have today.
Yeah.
That's been my major piss off point.
Well, you should be that, because as he said, there's this big sucking sound, and it's our jobs, it's our economy, and we're now trying to put the toothpaste back in the tube. I got to go. Thank you very much.
How do you feel about the fillet of fish, though?
And to those of you who I've left on hold, my apologies to you. We're just completely out of time. Stay tuned for the interviews. If you're listening to the podcast, unfortunately, they're not going to be at the end, and we're working on that problem.
Yeah.
Stephanie, thank you so much.
Yes.
And we're not going to be on next week. It's Labor Day.
That's right.
Go to the Labor Day parade. I'll be there with my union, and you don't have to be a union member to attend.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more Night Call right after this.
Don't miss today's Motor City Daily Deal. A Franklin Day Spa 60-minute massage for only $39. One incredible deal. Available for only 24 hours. Get it now at MotorCityDailyDeal.com.
Do you owe back taxes to the IRS that you can't afford to pay? Or are you stuck in a tax payment plan that's getting you nowhere? The IRS is now taking very aggressive actions, such as bank levies and wage garnishments. If you owe the IRS at least $15,000, call American Tax Relief. They've helped thousands of people like you eliminate up to 85% of their delinquent taxes. Call 1-800-493-8159. If you qualify, American Tax Relief can settle your tax debt for less than you owe, remove penalties and interest, and protect you from bank levies and garnishments. As a hardworking American, you do have rights. Call American Tax Relief for a free consultation and see how much money they can save you. Call 1-800-493-8159. If you qualify, you can save up to 85% on the taxes you owe. Call right now. 1-800-493-8159. That's 1-800-493-8159.
101 The Riff. Detroit's rock station. 101 WRIF.
The Riff.
My name's Rachel, and I'm 10 years old. I like riding my bike, playing soccer, and in 8 years, I'll be an alcoholic. I'll start drinking in middle school, just at parties. My friends will drink, so I will too.
Kids who drink before age 15 are 5 times more likely to have alcohol problems when they're adults.
My parents won't really know what's going on yet. I mean, I'll do okay in school, but when I drink, I'll do some things I don't really want to do. So by the time my parents talk to me about it, alcohol won't be my only problem.
Alcohol affects their judgment and their future, so start talking before they start drinking.
My parents won't believe it could happen to me.
For more information on teens and alcohol, and to learn what you can do, visit the web at stopalcoholabuse.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, the Ad Council, and this station.
Energy Hog to Team! Infiltrate the house and waste some energy!
No problem! It's got leaky window and no added insulation!
Perfect! Now go wild and waste some wattage!
The Mitchell House, a house like many others, except this one's under attack by energy hogs. They show up anywhere energy's being wasted.
Talk to me, hogs!
The washer, it's not an Energy Star rated.
Outstanding! What about the thermostat?
Not programmable!
Looks like we're living high on the hog!
Only one person has the power to get rid of energy hogs. You.
Hold on! Someone's home!
And he's got energy-efficient light bulbs!
To find out how you can fight energy hogs, log on to energyhog.org. You'll find fun games and lots of tips on making your home more energy efficient.
Now he's installing Energy Star appliances.
Not Energy Star! That's it! Get out of there! I'll get you, energyhog.org!
Hey! Wait for me!
Brought to you by the Alliance to Save Energy, the Department of Energy, and the Ad Council.
Thank you, and we're back. You know, when it comes to fighting crime, he's never going to roll over. He's McGruff the Crime Dog.
Roll over. You're okay, Joy.
Thanks.
And I got 2 words to make your neighborhood safer.
Uh-huh.
Coffee cake.
Ah, the old poison coffee cake trick. The crook takes a bite, falls down to the ground.
No, it's for your neighbors.
You want to poison your neighbors?
No, never.
Oh, thank goodness.
No. For 25 years, I've been given tips about preventing crime. One of them is to invite people over for a cup of coffee and share the problems you see on your street and what to do about
them. That's great.
You can invite your local police officer to help, too.
I'd come to your doghouse for coffee, cake, and a safer neighborhood.
You can cut down on crime by not just locking your door, but opening up to your neighbors.
Still, a 10-pound bundt cake dropped on a bad guy's foot could help.
It couldn't hurt. And go on to WePrevent.org for other tips to help, too.
A message from the U.S. Department of Justice, Crime Prevention Coalition of America, National Crime Prevention Council, and the Ad Council.
When I do it, I feel the blood rushing through me. My muscles tighten, and I keep going back for more.
Carmen Castillo is under the influence of Dana, her volunteer trainer.
Come on, Carmen, again.
By spending one day a week in the gym,
tuck your chin, Carmen.
Dana helps neighborhood kids like Carmen develop interests that keep them away from drugs.
Hey, let me see your shoulder shift. Jab, jab, great.
Be a coach, a mentor, a volunteer. No matter what it is, you have something to offer.
Cool workout, Carmen. See you next week.
Log on to helpyourcommunity.org or call 877-KIDS-313 and be an influence on the kids in your community. Brought to you by the Office of National Drug Control Policy and the Ad Council.
101 WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit.
Now, Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. Peter Werby here with you. Well, one of the things you must know, dear listeners, that I depend on is the right to free speech encoded in our foundation document in the First Amendment to the Constitution, the right that Congress shall make no law abridging freedom of speech, and a lot of other things as well. There's also an adjunct of that that has to do with privacy, the right to be free from government intervention into our private lives. And given the modern world and technology and what have you, that's getting to be more and more of a joke. Or let me put it another way, more and more of a threatened concept. Of course, it's never really been steadfastly adhered to by governments. Governments don't like it when they don't know what their citizenry is doing. So we've had to really struggle throughout our history as a nation. But it goes back even farther than that. Joining me for this segment of the Peter Werby Show is Frederick S. Lane. He's written American Privacy, the 400-year history of our most contested right. He's an author, an attorney, a freelance journalist, an expert witness, and professional speaker who focuses on the impact of emerging technologies on American society. The book is published by Beacon, and we welcome Frederick Lane. He is in Chicago right now. Welcome to the broadcast.
Well, thank you very much, Peter. It's nice to be here.
400 years ago, the subtitle is The 400-Year History of Our Most Contested Right. Is 1610, is that any significant date, or is this just a ballpark in terms of four centuries?
I think that's a fair way to put it. It's definitely a ballpark. And the point of it was really to underscore for people that the issues that we are wrestling with really predate the foundation of our country. And I think that that's actually an important point for people to remember, that the colonists had their own privacy concerns, both in terms of coming to North America as pilgrims and then in their dealings with the British Crown.
Yeah, I sort of focused. I was too self-focused. I was talking about the right of free speech. That means that you have the right to talk without the government intervening. But there's all sorts of other aspects of privacy, that we have the right to assemble, that we have the right to publish. Aspects like that that were free from government intervention. Do you include privacy in all that?
I absolutely do. As a matter of fact, I think you've put your finger on it very nicely, because when you really start to examine the concept of a right to privacy, I think one of the things that's interesting about it is that the founding fathers never used the word privacy in any of the documents that form the structure of our government. You can read through the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, the Declaration of Independence, and you won't find privacy in any of those documents. But part of the reason for that is that much of what we consider to be privacy or privacy-related issues, I think, was largely assumed by the founders. And for them, the focus of their concern was on what control individuals had over their lives vis-a-vis the government. And so when you look at the individual amendments, which is something that the Supreme Court did in the 1960s, you see that the general purpose of most of the amendments is to create a degree of distance, if you will, between citizens and the government so that citizens are free to live their lives with a minimal amount of interference. You've referenced freedom of speech, which obviously is the ability to have private opinions and to express them without being told you can't do that. Other obvious ones are the Fifth Amendment, which is your right to remain silent, sort of the opposite of the freedom of speech. But the government can't compel you to give up information against yourself, things that you would want to keep private. You don't have to quarter troops without, you know, basically a declaration of war. You've got freedom from search and seizure, which is the big one under the Fourth Amendment, which says that the government can't come into your home and search your papers or your holdings without probable cause and a specific reason for doing so. So there's a very clear intent on the part of the framers when they did the Bill of Rights to protect those aspects of our lives that we would assume to be private.
Well, there was the Magna Carta in the 13th century that laid out some of the rights of the people, at least the nobles that forced King John to sign that document. And still, it was done more, it was very, with all the rights guaranteed, the British Crown certainly didn't pay much heed to what King John had promised. Yet it remained in English jurisprudence and consciousness. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, this is an extraordinary break with history, that is the American Constitution, that went what preceded it. I mean, there is a body of English law, but to codify the rights of man, if you will, as it was called then, was extraordinary, wasn't it?
It really was. I mean, it was revolutionary in every sense of the word, what they were doing. And the fact, I mean, you have to understand that the Bill of Rights itself was a near thing, because there were many people, very well-meaning and I think very intelligent, who were concerned that if you delineated specific rights in the Bill of Rights, that you would essentially be ceding to the government all of the ones that you forgot to mention. And so there continues to be a great deal of debate over that. Obviously, the a significant thread in the whole Tea Party movement is the idea that the Tenth Amendment, which reserves to the people all unenumerated rights, et cetera, has been largely ignored, is a good part of their platform. And that's really a separate debate. What my book was really focusing on is where the concept of a right to privacy has come from, and really whether or not that is still meaningful today, particularly in light of the technology changes that we've seen.
My guest is Frederick Lane. He's the author of American Privacy, the 400-year history of our most contested right. Governments have been pretty oppressive since they arose 4,000 years ago, or however one dates it. And mostly you just did what the guy at the top told you. And if you didn't, folks with swords or whatever came along and let you know that you were making a mistake.
fair way to put it.
Okay, here we have this foundation document of our nation. It enumerates our rights, and yet, as you say in your subtitle, all of this and the privacy that emanates from it is contested. Why does this remain a contested area?
Well, it remains a contested area for a whole host of reasons. You've alluded to some of it in the sense that there are things that the government, there are laws that are passed by the government that the government needs to or expects to be obeyed. And in order to ensure that those laws are being obeyed, there are certain amounts of privacy invasions that take place. With respect to even something as simple as a driver's license. Think about the amount of information you need to give up to get that. There are a whole host of other examples. You start getting told Social Security Administration, so on and so forth. And so we trade a certain amount of privacy in exchange for being law-abiding citizens. We exchange a certain amount of privacy for being protected. National security, of course, is a huge privacy invader, as we saw in the middle 2000s when the NSA was listening to AT&T's traffic at various places around the country, which is a huge uproar in the New York Times and actually is the launching point for my book. So we do, as citizens, expect the government to do a certain amount of privacy invasion to make things work the way we expect them to make sure we're safe. The other piece of it, to be honest with you, is that we give up a huge amount of privacy, quote-unquote, or information that some people would consider private, in exchange for very little. That is to say, the convenience of using a easy pass as we go through the toll booth, or exchanging it for a coupon maybe with a courtesy card at Starbucks or at the supermarket. So there's a lot of things that we do as individuals that we don't think about on a moment-by-moment basis that has contributed to this whole privacy issue. And when I say whole privacy issue, what I'm really referring to is the fact that there are huge amounts of electronic information about all of us that are now available mostly to, private industry as part of its advertising efforts, but also increasingly through the actions of the Patriot Act to the government as well.
I was going to ask you, Frederick Lane, about I was read back a quote you had made in answer to a Q&A that accompanied your book as part of the publicity material, but maybe I ought to ask you that. I don't like asking other people's questions, but it's relevant. I'll give some of it that you've already said, and that's the British Prime Minister John Major in the early 1980s, when he was talking about installing these cameras in public spaces, he said, if you got nothing to hide, you've got nothing to fear. And sometimes even people say that about the phone being tapped or even police coming into your place. So what? A cop comes to your door and say, hey, I need to search your house. And rather than you saying, you got to have a warrant, you would say, hey, why not? Come on in. If you got that helps law enforcement. So, but the question that was asked of you, and I want to ask, follow up on this, and you answered very eloquently, is why should we care about privacy? And what do we lose if privacy disappears?
Well, I think that we lose a bunch of different things. My concern with respect to that is twofold. Number one, present-day concerns, and then historical concerns. The present-day concerns really get to our relationship with the government and our ability to have autonomy in what we do. And this is really getting back to what the founders were talking about, that if you have a situation where the Crown, as it did, can issue general warrants and give a portmaster the authority to go into any ship or any home looking for contraband, then you've got a much more subservient relationship to the government. You don't have a great deal of autonomy in terms of who can come onto your property and who cannot. Now, again, if you don't have anything to hide, that may not bother you. But for a lot of people, it's a more existential concern about the fact that they are not being treated as, in a sense, fully adult individuals who are given a certain right over their property and over the space that they control.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, because that actually you anticipated my question, because you talk about some practical concerns in the political arena. Most people, even in times of revolution, they're spectators, and usually history is made by a minority of the population, except in some different cases. It was certainly true during the American Revolutionary War period. But there is something humiliating about having to submit to bureaucratic authority. And that's usually not considered, don't be silly,
Mm-hmm.
But the idea that someone else has the power over you, and in sort of what you said, infantilizing people, essentially.
Right.
You're a little kid, and I can search your car, I can search your person, I can search your house. I think that's a big element.
I think it's a huge element. And let's not forget that the underpinning of our judicial system is innocent until proven guilty. And we need to be increasingly aware, I think, of the tremendous investigative power that the government has through increased resources, increased law enforcement personnel, certainly in terms of increased computer technology and resources. The ability to harass people or to make life difficult for someone is, I think, profound. And I think we need to recognize that bureaucrats are human, too, and it's possible for them to make mistakes. There are plenty of cases of individuals who can't fly these days because their names are similar to someone who may actually have done something wrong or might do something wrong. And then there are people who are petty and manipulative and what have you who would misuse this power. And this is where history comes in, because I think that this is a critically important thing to remember. We have very concrete examples in our history of governmental power being misused in these kinds of ways. You can go back to the 40s and 50s with the MacArthur era, the anti-communist campaigns of J. Edgar Hoover, who conducted decades of warrantless wiretaps of individuals throughout the United States. We can look at the fact that we had a president who was impeached in part because of his invasions of privacy, referring specifically to the fact that Richard Nixon was using the United States military to conduct domestic surveillance in the late 1960s and early 1970s, chiefly of Vietnam protesters, but also of other people who were perceived to be a political threat to him. So as much as one can glibly say, I have nothing to fear, you can't really, I think, ultimately be confident that that power to investigate won't be misused unless we've got constitutional standards that are adhered to that make it clear that there needs to be probable cause before someone actually turns your life upside down.
The book is American Privacy, the 400-year history of our most contested right. The author, Frederick S. Lane, is my guest on the Peter Werbe Show. And you can go to fredericklane.com. That's FREDERICKLANE.com. Also my website, peterwerbe.com. Beacon.org. Beacon is the publisher. It's a lot of great titles there. Well, I could imagine someone, I always do this, imagine a listener thinking, well, Mr. Privacy Guys, because I agree with you, that's all, you know, well and good in the 18th century, but we're talking about terrorism. We're talking about the 21st century. We're talking about the necessity to get the jump on guys that mean us great harm. And so, you know, if you don't want to wind up with another September 11th, maybe we ought to not have such a demand for this existential angst, if you will, that that I get when I cross the border and open your trunk, I feel like saying, well, why? Nothing in there, And plus, these guys that do that are listening to my show right now, so they're gonna make sure to have
right,
me do that
exactly.
Again.
Well, this is the thing. I don't want anyone listening to this show or anyone reading my book certainly to suggest or to come away with the impression that I am anti-national security just because I'm pro-privacy. I actually do think that the two not only can coexist, but really that they have to coexist. Because essentially we're fighting a form of totalitarianism. And it would seem to me that the irony would be to turn our government into a totalitarian entity to win that war. And so I don't think anybody really wants to go that far. And I think we do have some legitimate debate over where the boundaries can be drawn. How aggressively should, domestic intelligence be conducted in order to protect us? And I think that where we really come down on this is that we need to make sure that we have the checks and balances that are built into our system to make sure that we can always take a look at this. And a good example of that, I think, Peter, is that if you look at the way the Patriot Act is drafted, one of the things that is particularly disturbing is that the national security letters that can be issued by the government are extraordinarily difficult to challenge. That is to say, in terms of what information is being retrieved by the Federal Bureau of Investigation and other agencies, how do we know how much information is being collected? How do we know to what purposes that is being used? And there are actually provisions of the law where it is illegal to notify people that their information has been requested subject to these national security letters. Now, obviously, it's understandable in the sense that you don't necessarily want to tip off a potential terrorist that, you know, this investigation is taking place. But if we can't in any way, shape, or form bring that before an independent judiciary and have them determine whether or not there have been any abuses, then the simple truth is that abuses will occur. And then you start to get into some real questions about whether or not the fundamental structure that was set up by the Founding Fathers is still in place.
Sure. I wonder, in the era, the modern era of communications, electronic communications, what has really happened to privacy? Certainly, when we, as a nation, learned that during, well, probably from the beginning of the Bureau of Investigation early on in the 20th century through who knows how long before email became the form of communicating, the idea that private letters that had been sent among people were steamed open, like by the FBI or local, what they called Red Squad, was just horrendous to all of us. Now, I mean, I'm not doing anything illegal or anything, but I mean, I tell people routinely, you know, anything you write in an email message is public knowledge. There is no privacy on the internet whatsoever, either what sites you're going to or certainly the what you're writing.
Well, I mean, tell it to your former mayor, right?
Absolutely.
I was thinking of Kwame Kilpatrick when we were getting ready for this, because, you know, isn't he, like so many other public figures these days, a textbook example of how there is no privacy with respect to electronic communications?
Yeah.
And, you know, what people need to understand is that, for starters, as a practical matter, every email and every text message goes through multiple servers. And when it goes through multiple servers, it is routinely being copied. Now, whether or not those copies are retained is up to the individual service provider, and that'll vary from case to case. But electronically, it's being downloaded, passed on, and that is a replicative process. So it is not impossible for dozens of copies of a given message to exist, however temporarily. And, of course, as was completely clear in Mayor Kilpatrick's case, you know, those copies were being stored for quite some period of time.
Which is unusual for text messaging.
It's a little unusual, although I will tell you that as storage space drops, the cost of storage space drops,
yeah,
the length of time for which material is stored grows exponentially.
Right.
Because what used to drive the copying over of old messages was the fact that tapes and hard drives were so expensive, you couldn't go out and buy more. Now you go down to your local Costco or whatever, and you can buy a terabyte for, what, $150?
Sure.
I mean, it's staggering. So, the thing is that, you know, we ought to give a lot of credit to Ben Franklin, who was postmaster under the British Crown for about 25 years before he became the Continental Congress's postmaster. And he was the one who really drove this idea of postal privacy. Mm-hmm. He saw that as being a fundamental element, really. Again, we're getting back to that concept of citizens as adults, you know, that their communication should be treated as confidential, and the government had no business reading those, unless it had a very good reason for doing so that it could use to persuade a judge to allow the government to open those letters. We never really grappled with that issue of confidentiality when we created electronic communications. And Congress has been totally derelict in addressing these issues. They are so far behind, it's staggering. But unfortunately, email and text messages never got the same legal protection that mail did.
Yeah, I think maybe just as a parenthesis, and then we ought to get back how you talk about what we should do, where we should go from here in your book, American Privacy. You delete your email. All gone, right?
That unfortunately is one of the great fantasies of the 21st century, because without getting into too much detail, I do computer forensics as a sort of, you know, full-time thing. And computer forensics exists because when you delete files on your computer, you're simply deleting the file name. You're not actually deleting the content. To actually delete the content in a thorough way takes a lot more effort. And that's only good for a file that you've created on your computer that you have complete control over. if you've emailed that file to anyone or you've put it on a flash drive or whatever, all of a sudden now it's that much more difficult to actually delete the content. And there are lots of people in jail for precisely that reason.
Well, there's, as we said, and is there in the subtitle of your book, The 400-Year History of Our Most Contested Right, and there's been, since these amendments to the Constitution were written, constant infringements. So what do we do? What would be a way to assure that we have privacy, the privacy we deserve?
Well, I think the two or three most important things. First of all, personal responsibility is the most important thing. I think we need to be much more conscious of how we use technology and what we're using technology for and who we're delivering that information to. Again, Mayor Kilpatrick is a perfect example. Don't text something to someone that you don't want to show up in, the Free Press. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
The second thing is that we should have a much more aggressive Congress in terms of dealing with these kinds of privacy issues. A good example is that the European Union favors a system called opt-in, which basically says that in order for a company and to some degree governments to collect information or redistribute it, they need to get specific permission from individuals to collect it, and then each time it's being passed on to some other organization, they need specific permission saying, this is how we're going to use your information. That would make a huge difference. In the United States, it tends to be opt-out, which means that the assumption is that unless you tell the corporation that you don't want your information being used, they tend to do so. And that we could have much, much better privacy standards altogether. That leads really to my third idea, which is that much in the same way that we have an Environmental Protection Agency or a Federal Communications Commission or a Food and Drug Administration, we really should consider putting together a federal privacy protection agency that could have a staff of well-trained privacy experts who could help establish standards for government and corporate and, to some degree, individual privacy behavior.
Well, let me stop you there because, unfortunately, we are completely out of time. But this is an extraordinary book. If you value your privacy, you know, you're not going to get a note in the mail from the government. We've decided to end all this. A lot of it is, you know, it's death of a thousand cuts. So the first step is to be informed about the threat to it. The book is American Privacy, The 400-Year History of Our Most Contested Right. Frederick Lane is the author. He's been my guest. You can go to Frederick Lane. That's FREDERICKLANE.com. The book is published by Beacon, so you can go to beacon.org or one more, Peter Werbe, WERBE.com. Fred Lane, thanks for being on my show.
Thank you very much, Beer.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with another guest right after this.
Don't miss today's Motor City Daily Deal. A Franklin Day Spa 60-minute massage for only $39. One incredible deal. Available for only 24 hours. Get it now at MotorCityDailyDeal.com.
That's the sound of people throwing out their old dehumidifiers. They've replaced them with the energy-saving Wave Ventilation Unit. Wave Ventilation expels moisture, gases, and toxins trapped in your basement or crawl space and replaces it with drier, fresher air. The computerized Wave Ventilation requires no maintenance. There are no buckets to empty, no filters to change. And compared to a dehumidifier, it will save you hundreds of dollars a year in energy costs. One customer wrote,
I was stunned by the difference. I had a dehumidifier for almost 20 years without ever getting rid of that musty smell. And now that smell is finally gone.
Wave can transform your home into a drier, healthier environment. Satisfaction guaranteed. Find out more about Wave Ventilation right now.
For free information, go to goodairnow.com. That's goodairnow.com. Or call 1-866-324-9481. That's 1-866-324-9481.
101 WRIF.
Everything that rocks.
Detroit's Rock Station.
101 The Riff.
Dad, can I ask you something?
Sure.
There's this girl I kind of like.
Say no more.
You just have to impress her. Okay, but how?
Just, I don't know, pick up a lot of heavy things around her.
Like what?
You know, desks, chairs, people. Grunt if you have to.
Grunt?
Yeah, be like, oh! There you go.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. When you adopt a child from foster care, just being there makes all the difference. To learn more, call 1-888-200-4005. A public service announcement brought to you by Adopt U.S. Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Red Defender! Thank goodness you're here! That huge asteroid is headed right towards Earth!
I'll handle this.
Like an arrow shot from a man-sized bow, the Red Defender hurtles into space using his super strength to stop the asteroid!
He's stopping the asteroid! It's moving away from Earth! You saved us! How did you do it?
I just stopped the asteroid and reversed its course back into space.
Look, the moon! It's exploded!
Where exactly did you throw that asteroid?
Away. I threw it away.
No more moon. That means no more tides. Tides are created by the moon.
And no more walks in the moonlight. I love walks in the moonlight.
Saving the world isn't easy. Saving a life is. Just one pint of blood can save up to three lives. To find out more, go to bloodsaves.com. A public service message brought to you by the Ad Council.
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werby.
And that kind of gives you an idea of what this half hour is going to be like. It's a drummer. I get the impression there's a drummer in the room somewhere. I'm John O'Leary, and the man you just heard in the background is Johnny B. Badanjic. Hi, John.
Hi, John. How are you? I was just covering that myth about you getting fired from Peter Wolf and Jay Geil. So I wanted to tell all the listeners out there, huh?
It's true.
It's true. It wasn't true. That's a long story, but maybe we'll go into that later. But I want to thank Peter Werby, first of all, for letting me do this interview, since Peter is the master of interviews. I don't know if he had something else to do or if he's just scared of Johnny B. Many are, but not yours truly. I've known John for decades. And good to see you the other night out there at Pine Knob, by the way.
That was a lot of fun.
It was, wasn't it, to be back on that
stage?
People really
enjoyed themselves. The fans are great. We had a great time. Everybody had a great time.
The place was packed. Unbelievable night. The energy was definitely flowing from you guys and the Giles band. And that's nice, but the reason we're here today is to talk about some contemporaries of B's, other drummers. The main reason being there is a new book out called Sticks and Skins, and it's written, or should I say produced more really, by Jules Follett. Jules, how are you doing?
I'm doing terrific, thank you.
Tell us a little about the book to get us started, okay?
Well, the book is called Sticks and Skins. It's 8 pounds. And
it's
516 drummers that I photographed.
And you said it's a coffee table book, which it is.
It is.
So you better brace your coffee table for this
Please
one,
do.
Right?
Yes, okay. I would appreciate that. Actually, I photographed 516 drummers in 53 cities in 2.5 years. It's basically the premise of the book is to really tell the story about the drumming community. Drummers are different than other musicians.
No doubt.
Yes.
I won't go any further, Johnny.
Drummers uplift each other.
Mm-hmm.
There's a camaraderie that is different than other musicians. And they really give more than they take.
Is all that true, John?
Yes. We're not like lead guitar players.
I see.
How many does it take to screw in a light bulb? Only one, and the world revolves around them.
I love it. Right. And in a lot of cases, the drummers, of course, being back there on the bandstand, except for Phil Collins, of course, who really gave drummers an upfront appearance because all the vocals he did over the years with Genesis and solo. And you come to think of it, in the early days of the Rockets,
doing
vocals, right, before Dave Gilbert,
yeah.
Kind of give them an upfront appearance, but a lot of times, kind of like bass players. I was talking to Danny Klein of the Giles Band about this. You know, you get kind of shoved off into the side and kind of forgotten that if you guys aren't back there doing the beat, nothing's really happening.
That's right.
So it's interesting to come up with a book about drummers. I don't know if I've ever seen one before, actually. I'm sure they're out there, but I've never seen anything like this. Really incredible photography. Go ahead, John.
I was just going to say, this is the biggest book ever produced on this amount of drummers. You know, there's been magazines, and there's been a few other books along the way through the past few years. You know, Max Weinberg had his book out, and Ludwig Drum Company's had a book on drummers. And, you know, there's been Drummers A to Z and that kind of stuff, and there might be 16 or 17 guys in there. This is 516 drummers.
Just leafing through it here as you guys came in a little while ago and looking at all the drummers that are in the book, you've covered pretty much everybody from all genres of music. And that brings me to Steve. And Steve, let me see if I can get the name. Badalamenti.
Perfect.
Did I get that right?
Very well spoken.
That's the Italian version, but he's Americanized it to Badalamenti too. No, Badalamont. Steve Badalamont. And Steve, tell us about yourself and your company.
Well, I am the president of Innovation Drum Company. I am the only 100% American drum manufacturer, and I'm proud that everything that I manufacture is from the state of Michigan.
Okay.
And Detroit, specifically, in its surrounding areas.
And you've been doing this for how long?
My company's been on the books and registered with the state and the federal, 1998 is when we started January.
And you, from what I have read on the Internet, doing research for this, the little research I did, because I have enough people in here just to tell me everything, apparently you've become quite well known for your ability to, now, am I wrong, do you repair drums as well as new?
That's how I got into the business.
Was repairing. That's what I thought I was reading on the Internet, and you've become very well known for doing that. I wouldn't even know where to begin. You know, to me, you just stretch some skin over a big drum thing, and it would work. I'm sure there's more to it than that, right?
Well, you know, when you consider that the drum set is only 82, 83 years old, when you think about a piano or a violin, 700-800 years, piano at least 600-700 years, the drum set's only 82 years old. It's an American invention.
Right.
We're really in our infancy, so much of the attitude toward our instrument was that way.
Some of your clients?
Let's see. I have so many that I can't, that I can't mention because I have endorsements with other companies. But,
okay.
You know, the man to the right of me, Johnny B. Badanjek, is one of my, he's not a client, he's one of my artists. It's a privilege to work with him. He's a brother as well.
Now, as you say, one of your artists, what does that entail?
That he chooses to play my drums over any others.
Oh, I see.
I work with Lenny White. We're getting ready for the new Chick Corea tour, Return to Forever next year.
Uh-huh.
We completed the one in 2008. I work a lot with, we've got one of the young, new, great drummers. His name is Chris Dave, who will be featured at the Montreal Drum Festival this October, Sunday the 24th.
And you're a local boy originally?
Yes, born and raised in Detroit.
So we're keeping it in town. That's always nice. And it's good to see some local people really taking off and getting somewhere in any kind of business, but especially in any facet of the music business, maybe because that's what I do for a living, and I like to see that. I mean, we have the musical talent here in Detroit.
Unquestionably.
Except for that guy over there, that B guy.
Yeah,
but, you know, we have a lot of musical talent, and it's good to see. And the Pastoria brothers, for instance.
Brian and Mark.
Brian and Mark, who were in Adrenaline years ago, and now Harmony Park is their business. They have a production studio, and they're getting recognition for doing lots of great production. And now we have you doing this for, what, the past 12 years, I guess it would be?
Right. I've been involved in, I don't like to say drum repair. It's really drum enhancement.
Ah, good word.
You know, and then I just started looking at, when I got out of music school, all the old drummers were looking to the instruments of the past, not the current instruments. So I started studying and examining, you know, what the greatest attributes were.
How do you learn something like that? I mean, just by doing?
Well, when you're a drummer and you grow up playing drums, you become a closet,
finagler.
You're noodling around.
Finagler. Okay, I got it.
You know, you're noodling around and fixing parts because it's a percussive instrument. It's just goes through a lot of wear and tear.
You're smashing the instrument because in those days everything was built really thin. The cymbal stands you would knock over, they're very thin. They started rock and roll drummers and they started to look at making things more sturdy and stuff like that. So they come up with thicker stands compared to the little foot pedals on a chain that you would break and all that kind of stuff. And so he would start doodling and try to make things stronger, better.
Makes sense.
He makes the Rolls Royce of drums in the whole world. I mean, his product is his snare drums weigh like 30, 40 pounds, you know, compared to most snare drums and maybe weigh maybe 8 or 10 pounds.
So when I'm looking back at, say, early Beatles, they're operating with equipment that probably wasn't really designed for what they were doing, right, John?
Right. Well, you know, like I say, if you watch Ringo, Richard would be playing, and they would have the thin stanzas.
Uh-huh.
And back then Ludwig came up with a thicker model, because all the big rock drummers were destroying stuff on stage,
yeah.
And they'd take it into the shop, and then they start coming up with very heavy duty stands. You know,
uh-huh.
Like most drummers, we just nail everything down and gaffer tape.
Just so, right. So it wouldn't fall all apart.
Yeah,
right. That makes perfect sense.
Knock the lead singer into the audience, you know, because the bass drum is crawling across the stage. So.
How did you wind up hooking up with Steve?
My son was flying out of town at the airport, and he walked up to my son. He says, "You're Johnny B, aren't you?" And he goes, my son said, "No, that'd be my father." He just dropped me off at the airport. I was going somewhere. So we exchanged numbers, and then I met him, and it's just been a great friendship, you know.
It
his
seems
whole family,
like it.
Not only him, but his brothers and his mother and his father and all that. You know?
So it's funny how in this world we just run into each other, and things develop out of that. And your son, we might as well give him a plug, is the editor of Real Detroit.
Yeah.
Johnny B. Jr.
Yes.
So tell us more about the book, Jules. Why don't we slide the microphone over there, and let's get back to the book. It is in publication now, obviously.
Yes,
I'm looking
stores,
right at it. In fact,
shops
our friend Elisa Z, who is right behind us, who you may hear do traffic for Metro Traffic on another radio station here in town, probably several under different names. I never knew how all that worked. Elisa kind of put this whole thing together. And I appreciate you doing that.
My pleasure.
There, had to get her voice in there somewhere. Jules, tell us more about the book.
Okay, well, and one of the things is the reason I'm here with Elise and Steve Bedelement was that Steve believed in this project from day one. And in the true drummer fashion, started calling me and giving me all these amazing drummers, not only in Detroit, although we've got so many from Detroit. We've got Julian Pavone,
mm-hmm.
the world's youngest drummer. We've got Liddell Abrams, who Steve introduced me to, is with C.C. Winans. Marquise Johnson was out with Charlie Wilson. J. Drew Sheard, the Clark Sisters.
Climb up on
Brian,
your mic a little
you just,
bit.
You
there
just,
you go.
You just spoke about Brian.
Right.
Brian Pastore is in the book.
Yeah.
And the Funk Brothers, Kenneth Spiderweb Rice, and the Funk Brother that we lost last year, Uriel Jones, who was very, very special to me.
And I'm glad you're mentioning who these people are with as you run them down, because some of our audience may not be familiar with some of the genres of music that you're talking about. So basically, you have everybody in this book. How did it come about? How did you get everybody to sit down and do what they did for the book? Money. She's going, money. But there's more to it than that, right?
That's the opposite of what I did,
right,
actually.
Exactly. I know that.
For many years, I did entertainment photography, so I would shoot the headliners.
Okay. So you had run into these people before.
Yes, but I would, not so much the drummers, because they were way in the back.
Right, right.
So I would challenge myself as a photographer
mm-hmm.
to get a good picture. I would send it to a drummer, and they would say, thank you,
uh-huh.
which was a word that was kind of new to me in the
right.
entertainment.
And it's always kind of nice to hear, actually.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So I ran into Chuck Berry, had Liberty DeVito working with him, and I was talking to Lib, and I said to him, I got this a lot of photos of drummers. And I said, thinking about doing this book, and he said, never been done, which
uh-huh.
was something I was really excited about. And so he took me to the big NAMM show, the National Music Show, and introduced me to, I don't know how many drummers.
Well, gee, that's a perfect place to go to
exactly.
meet everybody all at once, right?
Right. And when Liberty, you know, says it's the real deal, people started jumping on board, mm-hmm. accepting my phone calls. And literally, I mean, 516 drummers, 53 cities in 2.5 years. The reason I was able to do that, one, that the Lord really wanted this book to be done. He really wanted them to finally get the recognition.
Mm-hmm.
But I also believe it's because one drummer gave me 10.
Uh-huh.
And those 10 gave me another 10.
Like you said, we were talking earlier, it's a community.
Exactly.
There's no, in our business in radio, people think we all hate each other. It's not true. I mean, from the different stations. We all get along. We just have friendly competition.
Exactly.
We like to show each other up if we can. Johnny?
If you think about it, drums were the first telecom company.
Okay,
you know,
because
going
of
back,
because
everybody's beating on a tree trunk,
sending
a message
messages.
To the next
right,
village.
Right,
you know,
right.
That was it before Michigan Bell and AT&T
right,
and all that other stuff.
Right.
You know, there it is.
So, the point being that maybe because drummers are so far sometimes in the background, they almost have to huddle together and enjoy each other because a lot of times the media doesn't give them the kind of recognition they should get.
I believe so, yes.
Would you agree with that, Mr. B?
Yes. They always talk to the lead singer.
Yeah, they always talk
Everybody
to the lead
wants
singer.
To talk to the lead
right.
singer.
We want know? Wolf. We don't That's care right. about Stephen Joe Bland.
They just
want
to know, you know? How long did it take you to get that towel in your pants.
Exactly. Okay. Oh, I could tell a story, but I won't go there. It's funny. I'm just sitting here thinking, now the Guile show the other night, and I just mentioned Stephen Joe Bland, who is no longer with the band. And I'm as guilty of this as anybody else. Now, I've known these guys and Giles for years, and they have this new drummer, but I couldn't tell you his name right now.
Marty.
Thank you, Johnny. But you get my point?
Yes.
The point being that you guys kind of stick off in the background there. And as you say, everybody knows Peter Wolf.
Right.
Nobody seems to know the drummers.
They know Jay Giles.
Sure.
They know Magic Dick.
Right. Even though they think Jay Giles is actually Peter Wolf. They get that confused. But, yeah, exactly. You're right. And now because of this book, and this is a beautiful, beautiful book, really would look good sitting on your coffee table, right?
It's the Monet
art
book of drummers.
And I'm telling you, this thing is heavy.
I wish you could see it.
I'm sitting here with, this is a heavy, what did you say, 8 pounds? More like
8 pounds.
80 pounds.
Yeah, right.
Beautifully done. Tell us about some of the other people involved in the book. I'm noticing the names on the front. What is Boogaloo. Back off
that
Boogaloo.
That is a drummer by the name of Tommy Shekel, who's been a drummer with the Buckinghams for years and is now out with Paul Revere and the Raiders.
Okay.
And I've known Tommy, again, from photographing, you know, bands for many years. And he also does website work and graphic arts. And so I also asked him what he thought about doing this project, and he said it was great. And I said, well, I need somebody to work on with me.
Right.
In that manner. And so he's...
So he did the graphic design and layout,
all the graphic design and the layout.
And the layout is very well done.
Yeah.
I mean, you've obviously picked the right guy.
I did.
What was his name?
Tom Shekel.
Tom?
Tom Shekel, right.
That's from
Boogaloo Design.
From Boogaloo Design. And he's the, you said he was the drummer?
Drummer for
from the Buckinghams.
Buckingham.
Even back in the Don't You Care days,
no.
Johnny? No,
not
that,
quite
far,
that
back.
Far back.
Okay,
because
I go back that far. Now I'm dating myself. Your art director is?
Is Jamie Pastor. She was my assistant on the project.
Okay.
And a really good art director. Lissa Wales was a photographer that I never was able to meet. I never had the fortune to meet. She passed away October 2005 of leukemia. Lissa was truly the drummer's photographer.
Okay.
And when I started this project, I guess because I'm a woman, she was blonde, I'm blonde, people would, you know, kind of put us kind of together. And I started to realize how much the drumming community really loved her and missed her. So I spoke to her sister. I ran into her sister at the NAMM show and asked her if I could look through the archives, Lissa's archives.
I was going to ask, since you had never met her, how did you end up getting the photographs?
Yeah, her sister has all of her archives, so I spent some time in Phoenix and went through them and asked individual artists if they would like to use Lissa's photos, because I had not met them, obviously, to photograph them myself.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone was just so pleased to be able to use the photos.
Correct me if I'm wrong, not all the photography in the book is from just her, correct? Or is it all her photography?
No. It's by the first 23 pages, I think, something like that, is Lissa's work, and then the balance is my company, Photos by Follett. It's all the work I've done over the years.
Okay. And I've heard of you before. I'm not sure where, and I could. You're not local, are you?
I live in New Buffalo, Michigan now.
You do?
Yep.
Okay.
Grew up in Chicago, but live in
Chicago. I knew I'd heard of you from somewhere in the past, but, you know.
Oh, give me a home for the Buffalo Roam.
The Jules, the 70s and 80s and even the 90s are a little blurry, you know, in this business. Johnny knows what I'm talking about. Steve is sitting over there like texting as we're talking. You better get him back in on the action. Steve, what else have you got to add about the book and about your involvement?
Well, you know, you're in this industry, and what Jules said and what Johnny has said is absolutely the truth. We are a community. Drummers help each other out all the time. We really have a camaraderie between us. You don't see it between guitar players, violinists. In fact, those guys are kind of vicious between each other.
Right.
But no, drummers really do support each other. But Jules came in. And there's been several decent drum books, but what Jules did is she raised the bar for everybody. She came in, the goodwill and the love that she gave to everybody, I mean, she just elevated our craft by this book. This book made us all better drummers, made us better people.
Really, you think so?
Oh, bar none. Everybody in this industry knows Jules Folly.
Okay.
I mean, that's a big thing to accomplish in two and a half years.
I would imagine it would be.
You go to the NAMM show, everybody's singing Jules' praises. Because all the drum books that are out there, some of them are pretty informative, but what Jules says was, B is right. It's artwork.
It really is, from glancing through it.
And she also let the artists, and Jules, you cut in if I'm getting any of this wrong, she let the artists put their best foot forward. Tell me what you've done. Tell me where, it's kind of like what I've done, where I am, and what I want to do.
Okay, and that, of course, is the narrative that is in the book along with the pictures. It's not just a picture book. We're getting a lot of information in here as well. Slide the mic over there.
And so. I think that that's part of the beauty of the book, too. I told each drummer that everybody had 300 words because what I learned from the drumming community is everyone's equal.
Uh-huh.
So if you were Ringo, you got 300 words.
Ah.
If you were someone else, you got the same 300. You know, that was it.
And you got to watch out for a guy like B who's very verbose. And
that's right. My bandana on. Put all the money in the bag.
He could go 1,000 words real easy, you know. But I appreciate what you're saying. Everybody gets equal time.
Equal time.
Effect.
And with a funny story about that is Bunny Carlos.
Bunny. I know Bunny.
Gave us four. And you know Bunny. You're going to know this is true.
Okay,
so
okay.
He gave us four sentences.
Oh, really? That sounds like Bunny. Right.
So I got back to him and said, Bunny, you know, you got to.
Now, if it was Rick Nielsen, that would be a little different. But, that makes perfect sense.
And Bunny said, I said what I wanted to say. And I thought, that's the beauty of this book.
Uh-huh.
So it wasn't an interview process. I didn't want this book to be magazine hardcover form.
Right, right.
It's like an interview. So everybody got to tell their own story, and some people wrote beautiful poetic things like Don Perry.
Okay.
And Jethro Tull wrote a beautiful thing like Behind the Cymbals. Other people made it more like a biography. Eric Kretz from the Stone Temple Pilots did the Ten Commandments of Rock and Roll.
I noticed Tommy Lee in here. I just want to throw out some names so everybody can get an idea of who is in this book.
Fleetwood, I mean.
Who else?
Max Weinberg. Ringo, of course.
Charlie Watts.
Buddy Rich. You know.
Buddy Rich, there's a great one.
Carmine Appice, original Vanilla Fudge.
Cindy Blackman, we've got Genie Shock from the Go-Go's. Mm-hmm.
I didn't have a chance to see the whole book, so this is all news to me as well.
Glenn Burke from Blondie, who originally came out of that New York scene, CBGBs with the Ramones and Talking Heads and Patti Smith.
So you really have covered all the genres of music here. That's
Nets,
very cool.
Beyond the jazz community.
Right.
Lenny White.
Anyway, Steve throws in that name again.
James Brown's drummers, you know.
Yeah, Bernard Purdy.
Well, it's truly an amazing book, and I've only had a chance to just glance at it because what we do nowadays when we get together for something like this is I get information from people and off the Internet, but I didn't actually see the book until you walked in here. And once again, if you're interested in not only great pictures of these guys doing their craft or just, you know, I really didn't notice. Are we... doing the craft and just funny pictures of them as individuals.
In their homes, in their videos, look behind the scenes of their lives and lifestyles.
This is pretty good. Don Brewer, I happen to...
I
opened the book to Don Brewer? You know, how did that happen?
That's a whole other week I spent with Don Brewer.
Right, yeah. Right.
Pete Rivera from Rare Earths in the book. He's with Chad Smith from Red Hot Chili Peppers.
If you like...
That's another week, because Chad used to live here.
There you go.
John O'Leary and Chad would probably be out for a couple weeks.
Oh, Chad, back in the day.
Toby Red Day.
Farrell. The Toby Red Day.
Farrell?
Yeah. Refresh my memory. Pine Knob.
And then Toby Red, and then he auditioned and got there. I went to high school with Chad.
Did you really? I remember the Toby Red days, as Johnny mentioned, because that was when you guys were just...
New York, New York.
Right.
They played at New York every Friday night.
And then, of course, Chad went off with the Chili Peppers and became famous. And that's always nice to see when we get somebody who gets national recognition who came from Detroit, a la the B here and his band. And, you know, what can I say about the book except go out and buy it? Do we mention price or do we not mention price?
The book is at £8, $75.
You know, that's not a bad price. Considering what you're getting in here, you are getting your money's worth. I was prepared for 200. I thought you were going to say something like 200 bucks.
Well, thanks, John. I'll take the 200. Thank you very much.
You see, you don't get it. Poor disc jockey. B is rich drummer. Poor disc jockey, rich drummer.
No.
Yeah, and B gets a complimentary copy because he's in the book, right? So there you go. That's a good deal.
The only way I'm rich is if I eat a lot of salad.
Exactly. $75 for this incredible book is a great deal. Where is it available?
You can go to the website, www.sticksandskins.com, and it'll list all the drum shops that it's in. It's on Amazon. It's in bookstores.
Okay.
So it's
What was that? Get closer
right
to the mic, and let's get that website out again.
It's sticksandskins.com.
Okay, great. And that's sticks and.
Like rock and roll.
Rock and roll, not and. Right. Sticks and Skins. It's a photography book about the world of drumming. I want to thank Steve Badalamonte. For coming in. Thank you, Steve.
My pleasure.
And, Jules, a pleasure to meet you. As I said, I've heard your name before, and I think we're going to get a little drum solo from the B here. No matter where he goes, he manages to find an instrument to play. Wait a minute. I was going to try to get you a little cymbal in there, but not bad for playing a wastebasket, right? There you go. Thank you, guys. And Elisa Z, thank you very much for putting this all together. We appreciate you coming in and maybe look forward to a follow-up book in the future. Any plans?
The Lord led me this far. He will lead me again.
You will see what happens. Once again, the book is Sticks and Skins, a photography book about the world of drumming. It is excellent. It is superb. It would look great on your coffee table. I suggest you put a special cover over the dust cover because people will be leafing through this a lot. Make them wash their hands before they do it. Even though it's $75, you could afford an extra copy just to, you know, hide away for future reference.
I like your way of thinking.
You see, there you go. Thank you, guys. Appreciate you coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jen.
Thank you for listening to Night Call on 101 WRIF. The views expressed on the program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or ownership of WRIF Radio. Now, stay tuned for more Riff Rock on 101 WRIF Detroit.
If you've been thirsting for some quality time with someone special, let Franklin Spa help to nourish your relationship. Franklin Spa offers the best in dual spa treatments for everyone. With many different packages and treatments to choose from, you and that someone special can indulge yourselves while creating a memory. Share this special time with your mother or daughter by enjoying a girl's getaway spa day. Side-by-side massages and hot stone facials are just the beginning. Craving some bonding time with your best friend? You'll both enjoy the BFF package. You'll each experience a 30-minute massage, a 30-minute facial, and hydrating foot treatment, plus so much more. Time to put the spark back in your relationship with someone special? Franklin Spa will cater to both of you. Allow yourselves to be treated to a couple's massage, champagne, and treats with the Romeo and Juliet package. Visit franklinspa.com to view a complete list of couples packages and services or to purchase a gift certificate. Franklin Spa is RSVP only. Go to franklinspa.com to make an appointment. That's franklinspa.com. Nourish yourself and your relationship at Franklin Spa.
Feels like time's running out. Maxed out on your credit cards, collection calls are coming every day, and you're two payments behind on your mortgage. You need help. We're Credit Card Relief, and we've been helping people just like you for nearly a decade. Call Credit Card Relief right now. The consultation is free, and the relief is real.
Call 866-290-8282. Not available in all states. Call 866-290-8282. That's 866-290-8282. Did you know the tap water in your home may be hazardous? Not to your health, but to your appliances and your wallet. Your home's hard water creates pipe clogging line scale, and that can shorten the life of your water heater, ruin your dishwasher, and break down your washing machine. Lime scale deposits block the heating element, and that could be costing you an extra $1,200 a year in energy and wear. But you can remove lime scale without chemicals, magnets, or salts. It's easy with HydraCare, the patented device used worldwide. See for yourself at bestsoftwater.com.
HydraCare.com. You simply clip HydraCare to your main water pipe. HydraCare removes and prevents limescale buildup in your entire plumbing system. If your home has hard water, extend the life of your appliances with HydraCare. Try it risk-free. Just go to BestSoftWater.com. That's BestSoftWater.com. Or call now, 888-883-8187. That's 888-883-8187.
101 WRIF.
Everything that rocks. 101 WRIF.
Everything that rocks.
Do people sometimes describe you as a saver? A bit frugal, penny-wise, and somewhat thrifty?
You know, cheap.
If that sounds like you, you're going to love the newest addition to MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com.
Coupon crazy!
At MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com, you'll still find great gift certificates for local businesses with goods and services on sale for more than half off. Find money-saving online coupons that you can download right now and start saving immediately. Log on to MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com and save big.
With online coupons from Autolab USA, with over 20 locations in the Metro Detroit area and a 12,000-mile, 12-month warranty. Hagopian Rug Care Center with 5 locations in Metro Detroit. They're the leader in carpet, rug, furniture, and tile cleaning.
If you're looking for ways to enjoy life and stay within your budget, then go
coupon crazy
now at MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com. That's MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com. Your online home for great ways to save big at local Michigan businesses.
If you want a new computer but think you can't get credit, think again. Just call Tronics Country right now. No matter what your credit status is, now you can own a brand new desktop or laptop computer. Your approval is guaranteed as long as you have an active checking account and can afford small weekly payments. With Tronics Country, there's no credit check. You will not be turned down. Call right now and order your new computer. You'll also get a free color printer and a free digital camera. Just call 800-990-2258. But that's not all. Call right now and you'll also get a free 22-inch high-definition TV with your paid purchase. You heard right. A free TV with your new computer. All you need is an active checking account and your approval is guaranteed. Don't wait. Call Tronics Country right now. Call 800-990-2258. That's 800-990-2258. 800-990-2258.
Check it out.
101 WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit.
Did I mention the music rocks?
Everything that rocks.